Blog Talk Radio.
Our life to this sport. We do thousands of sit-ups in camp. We run hundreds of miles, you know, for the ones that take it serious. And we just dedicate ourselves fully to our craft, man. We watch tape. We you know, we have attitude. We're rooting, and we want that fight to land on the line.
Fans, this is the Rope-A-Dope Radio Podcast. I am your host, Chris Carlson. We are live on a Tuesday night. Hope everybody's doing okay. I know I am. We got a lot to discuss inside the ring from last weekend, and also we got a fight coming up this weekend from Texas, Canelo versus Billy Joe Saunders, and we got some outside of the ring distractions, to put it lightly. Let's just put it that way. Obviously, like I said, we got a lot to discuss from the weekend. Andy Ruiz and Areola got it in. It was a closer fight than many. Well, closer maybe not on the scorecards, but competitive within the rounds, and especially the first couple. I mean, when Areola dropped him, and even in the third round when he almost dropped them again, it was pretty wild. It was pretty wild. And, you know, Ruiz actually didn't look that bad in round one. And then it looked pretty shaky. But Ruiz, you know, managed to pull away to win, you know, cleanly. We'll talk about some of the performances by both Ramoses, Abel and Zeus. Sebastian Fundora was in a fun firefight, go figure. We'll talk about some stuff overseas. Shouts out to the UK fans, Chisora and Parker, Taylor and Jonas. Sonny Edwards put in a very quality performance, I'd have to say. But overall, it was a pretty fun weekend. A lot of action. Arislandi Lara scored a quick little knockout. You know, it's been three fights now since he went back-to-back with Jared Hurd and Brian Castaño. So I'd say it is time, whether that's at 154, whether that's at 160, it's time to step back up, you know, for some competition. Obviously, the outside-the-ring stuff, Billy Joe Saunders' team right now, since yesterday, really, but especially today as well, just saying some silly stuff about the ring. All of a sudden, a 20 by 20 ring is an amateur ring. There's just no reason to fight in that type of ring, as if there's some kind of huge advantage in a 20 by 20. He's talking about 20, 22 or 24. I mean, that's ridiculous. So we'll get into that a little bit. We'll also talk some current fight news. Of course, we got our boxing Twitter segment that we normally end with. And then a couple other items, too. I mean, Terrence Crawford, Bob Arum was talking about he's back in September. Back in September. We got to wait till September. That kind of tells you that's probably his last fight with Top Rank, at least in the foreseeable future. I hope, anyway. Way, to be honest with you, I hope he at least tries to go free agency, or at least sits down with Al and, you know, see what they can put together. But that's just kind of crazy. I suppose he doesn't want to, you know, maybe he only owes him one fight, but he probably doesn't want to have two fights and possibly lose money if it's not a big fight. So there is some other items out there that we'll discuss, no doubt about it, but kind of off top, the whole ring thing is just ridiculous. You know, you can sit there and say, you know, the tainted meat thing if you want. That's fine. I get it. I mean, I don't know how much talk they can do over there, though, on the Saunders side, because they popped for something that was in a quote-unquote inhaler that could be seen as weird. Both of them were more minor on that scale. And I know a lot of people will say, no, the tainted meat, dude, that's a thing. You're right, it is a thing. But what else is a thing is, you know, the ranchers do put that stuff in the beef. Now, it was his mistake if that's actually what happened. It was his mistake. You could say he kind of paid for it. I mean, nowadays, at least he did get suspended. But, you know, clearly most people don't really get punished fully like they probably should. But, you know, the NFL, other leagues that have, when they have games in Mexico, they literally tell the players not to eat the meat. So it is a real thing. But, yes, of course, Canelo, you know, he should be held responsible for what happened, no doubt about it. Now, if it happened again in that same measurement, right, the trace amount stuff, he actually wouldn't be busted for it now because they changed some of the rules. But just so we know that stuff, we know about, you know, some of the scorecards he's received, no doubt about it. I mean, the draw, two of them stand way out. The draw against Mayweather is just ridiculous. Like beyond ridiculous, and obviously the 10-2, you know, with Golovkin, that was ridiculous as well. But so that we get it, he's an A side, he's the biggest name in boxing, especially over here. You know, as far as active boxers fighting other boxers, I know Pacquiao is. I mean, they don't do as big a gates right now. Pacquiao's name has faded some, and obviously Mayweather's not actively fighting boxers, right? So. Here's the thing, though. So you can sit there and say all that stuff, and that's cool. You know, I get it. That's fine. You can sit there and come up with conspiracies or real-life, you know, scenarios that you can point to about Canelo and whatnot. But this whole ring thing is just ridiculous. And I know, you know, over here, some people don't realize the state-by-state laws, meaning, you know, the athletic commission state-by-state, can be different. You know, so I've heard some folks say, oh, 22, 24, even a 26, you know, foot ring. You know, if you do kickboxing or something, some kind of combat sport that isn't going to go to the ground, sure, there is bigger rings and whatnot. But, and, you know, I've now heard and kind of reminded, and I think this is true. I say I think because I don't positively know 100%, but I do remember a 22 by 22 ring in Saudi Arabia for the Anthony Joshua, Andy Ruiz rematch. Don't quote me 100% on that. I did see people saying it. Of course, that's in, you know, a different country. But over here, when it comes to, you know, we all know the fight capital for now anyway, whatever happens in the future. But the fight capital is Las Vegas, like it or not, right? And I know this is in Texas, but 20 by 20 is super standard. Do you see the 18 by 18 at times? I think they just did it for a top rank show because I remember them saying, hey, it's 18 by 18. It happens. That is correct. Club shows, it can happen. You know, Billy Joe Saunders' dad was saying, you know, that's an amateur ring, 16 to 18. But then he started blending 18 and 20 together. And then by the end of the interview, or at least his end of his rant, right, he was talking about 20. There's no way we can fight the 20 by 20, you know, like as if that's like trying to get over. And that's where it's like just ridiculous. It's completely ridiculous to say a 20 by 20 ring is an amateur small ring. That's completely nonsense. Now, I'll say this. First of all, the whole contract thing, 22 by 22, I'd like to see proof of that being in the contract. But not even that. I'll just say this, okay? So UK fight fans out there, Billy Joe Saunders fight fans, whatever, don't think I'm just being biased here. Listen, if in fact, we've heard one side of it, really. So, you know, there's always three sides to a story, right? And I want to hear the other side so I can kind of come up with possibly a third side in there in a sense. Now, if Canelo's team did request an 18 by 18, that's ridiculous too. It should be 20 by 20. So I'll say that right off the bat. 18 by 18 doesn't need to happen in this type of fight. Now, does that exist in professional boxing? Sure. But anybody that knows and has been paying attention to the sport for a while, 20 by 20 is standard. It's not a small ring. 22 by 22 and 24 by 24, which is just ridiculous. I get why they'd want to do that. So if Canelo's side said, no, we're going to try 18 to 18, I can understand why they went to 24 then, you know? And let's just say this was just talking or mental games or why not try? It doesn't hurt to try. Now, if they really thought, you know what, if we don't get our 22 by 22, we're not fighting, and they actually lived up to it and didn't fight, then that would be totally ridiculous. But it could just be a ploy. Some people say mind games, like I said. I don't think Canelo's going to be bothered by that. But in the same breath, why not try for it? You know, why not? A 22 by 22 would help Billy Joe. I mean, there's no secret there. Clearly that would help him. But, you know, now Billy Joe Saunders recently, literally within like an hour or something like that, has said, you know, the ring size is fine. We're good to go. Everything's fine. He was literally sitting in bed watching Scarface, chilling. And if he just wants to skip, if he's just being Billy Joe and trolling people and trying to get the 22 by 22 just to see what would happen, that actually doesn't bother me that much, because why not? Why not try to get it? The only thing that would be, like I said, nonsense, ridiculous, absurd, whatever you want to say it, would be if they actually walked, which they're not going to walk. I never thought they'd walk, and Billy Joe Saunders just cleared that up, that the ringside's fine. Now, that'd be funny if they did get 22 by 22, though. And it would make for a more intriguing fight. I'm not going to say interesting, because then that would make him, or that would allow him to be on the move even more, right? It would be that much harder to cut off the ring. And we know that Canelo is not the best at cutting off the ring. So I wanted to kind of get that out of the way. This 20 by 20 shit, I mean, the U.S.-UK rivalry, I love it, dude. I think it's great. I really like most of the U.K. fans. We got some, you know, insufferable fans over here. They got some. We got some folks that just love Al Haymon or just love Bob Arum or just anti-Al Haymon, whatever, just like the Eddie Hearn stuff. Either love them or, you know, hate them, whatever. I'm cool with that. But this whole 20 by 20 shit, you're just a fanboy if you think it should be 22 by 20 or 24 by 24 and shit like that. If you think this is screwing Billy Joe Saunders for a 20 by 20, just stop, dude. Just stop. But, you know, maybe it was just his way of having fun and trying it, you know? Why not? I can't hate on that. And like I said, let me preference again. If, in fact, Canelo is trying to do 18 by 18, that's bullshit, too. That's bullshit, too. I'll say that straight up as an American. And obviously, you know, Canelo's Mexican. He was born in Guadalajara. But, you know, he spends a lot of time here, so... As an American fight fan, Canelo fights here mostly, right? That's where he's fought for a long-ass time. So I'm not biased in that situation. Anyway, we got a lot to talk about, no doubt about it. John will be joining us shortly to break down the weekend. We had some really, you know, that I mean, when it comes, push comes to shove, if you bought that pay-per-view, and some, you know, a lot of people said they didn't, and I respect it. Everybody, I've always said, everybody has their own entertainment value system, right? Everyone's got a different definition of entertainment value, but the shit was entertaining. I've bought or pitched in on much lesser, much more boring, much more just who gives a crap, move beyond this undercard now, please. Let's get to the main event. And the main event has sucked. So, I mean... You know, once you've been watching boxing for a while and you've either, like I said, paid outright or chipped in or whatever, you know what I'm talking about. But if this is your first time listening to the Rope-A-Dope Radio Podcast, welcome. It streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/Rope-A-Dope Radio. You don't have to go to Blog Talk and Rope-A-Dope and download the show directly there, listen to the browser. Some people have just done that for years. That's cool. You can find this platform, Rope-A-Dope Radio, on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Player FM, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spreaker, really all across the board. We're also part of the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network, which can be found in a whole lot of places. While you're at it, why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.com. It's boxing, football, baseball, basketball, everything, and I mean everything in between. One more thing. If you're thinking about cutting the cord or you have, you're not quite happy, I got something for you. It's called AT&T TV. The plans start as low as $69.99 a month. Simple pricing, no hidden fees. No annual contract. You can stream it anywhere on any device, of course, and they have the cloud DVR available. And if you upgrade to the choice package, you get a free year of HBO Max. And for a limited time, it might be done. You better go check it out. The NBA League Pass Premium for the rest of the season. That's AT&T TV. Okay, so like I said, I mean, the Ruiz fight, it's kind of funky because it actually, for me anyway, I thought Ruiz came out pretty well, jabbing to the stomach. You know, looking pretty decent. There was like a nice right hand by Areola, but I had him win in the first round, and I thought he, you know, I didn't see all this rust right away. I thought, you know, that's a pretty decent first round. And, you know, Ruiz is... does like the exchange. He does like the brawl. At times, he's put on flat performances as we've known, you know, throughout his career. But for him to be just like super fundamental out of nowhere with one good long camp with Eddie Reynoso, I think it's really probably asking too much from him. But you could kind of tell whether it was rust, whether it was, like he said, trying to find his distance, whether he was just trying to put on a show for the crowd. And by the way, it was under 4,000. It was like 3,900 or whatever. I think they sold all the tickets. I mean, that place was nuts. And not just in the crowd with the fights, right? But, I mean, it was loud for only 4,000 people. And, you know, that's what's funny about, like, let's say, the Minneapolis Armory, which will be like 3,500. Sometimes over 4,000, but you're so close that it seems louder on television. And that did help the setup of this stadium. As we know, there's really not a bad seat in it, even when it is not full capacity, because you're not spread out in some large arena or, you know, even worse, some huge stadium. Now, I get the stadium feel because you get the big screen and you pay $50 to get in. Who cares? You know what I mean? It's more of an atmosphere thing. So I'm not ripping that. At some point, I'm probably going to go to a stadium fight if they keep happening because it's fun. But that they were off the chain. Areola, that hard right hand, it was kind of on the side or the top of the head, dropped him. And it didn't look like Ruiz actually was all that hurt in that moment. He kind of like got dropped and was like, oh, you got me, okay. But it was what he did after that was like, it kind of seemed like he was just almost squared up a little bit, kind of caught off balance, had his left hand down the whole nine. Now, Areola, you know, got, you know, the better of the shots in the exchanges. More right hands and left hands. I mean, he was doing some damage. I did think Ruiz hit him with some pretty good shots there. But to go back in the third round and then more hard shots, you know, again in the exchange, he nearly drops again. I'd say stumble, but that's ridiculous. I mean, he definitely, his legs almost gave way again. But Ruiz in that round managed to start applying some pressure, and I'm not saying he stole the round, but he did actually land some pretty flush shots. I think it was a right hand late, last maybe 30 seconds, that landed pretty well, I thought. And then basically after the fourth round, you started to see that jab come back, started seeing more body shots, and just a clean punching, you know. Areola would still get his jab going and land right hands and whatnot, but that jab to the stomach, The left hooks, the combination, the jab in general, and the left hook cleaning up a lot of combos. That was a key thing and is a key thing, obviously, for Ruiz. But I really thought he pretty much took over the fight after that. There were some close rounds, some tight rounds. The 10th round was close. But, yeah, either the jab right hand, some movement. He started, you know, turning him a little bit and being a little smarter and working to the body and head. And he just started to, you know, outland him. He outlanded him, outworked him, landed at a higher percentage. And, you know, the two scorecards, 118-109, and then one was 117-111. You know, 9-3, 8-4, maybe. I'm good with that. But, yeah, 10-2, you know, I think you could probably give him one more round and make it 9-3. I think that's fair. 8-4 is probably stretching it. But this thing wasn't. This was a clear win that had a really fun first back and forth, just crazy exchange type rounds. So it definitely lived up to a brawl. In fact, had this fight just flipped around and you start with a 12 and worked your way back, could you imagine if the last three rounds were that? People would be like, dude, this is all, you know, and that's sometimes how it works. But I thought Ruiz calmed down a little bit. Like I said, I didn't think he'd be some finished, polished product here. Not only that, but when you lose so much weight, and I know both these guys look great. Areola looked phenomenal weight-wise and had one of his better performances as a pro on the top level anyway. And for me, it you know, when you lose all that weight, especially at these bigger weight classes, remember Chris Bird, up, down, all around. He looked great. You're like, man, you're looking good. But then all of a sudden, he's chinny. You know what I mean? Like, so Ruiz, you know, you can see it with Tyson Fury. You know, when he had, he's always going to have a little extra skin on him, right? He's not going to look phenomenal or whatever. But it took him a while to grind it out to where he just tightened up his body more. And that's obviously what Ruiz needs to do. But sometimes taking all that weight off, even if you're in great shape, can affect you kind of majorly. So where do we go next? You know, Luis Ortiz is where I'd like to go. If they want to go right to Wilder, cool. I think Wilder's going to probably get a fight this summer. So maybe he could wait around a little bit and then fight, you know, in the fall or winter more than likely. But I wouldn't mind, you know, the Luis Ortiz. I think that'd be a really good fight. In fact, Luis Ortiz's manager talked about how, you know, they've been told that that's probably their fight. They can get that fight. So, and it kind of made sense because, as we know, we spoke about this a couple times over, you know, a time period anyway. It sounded like, and Ortiz did fight last November on Fox, that this was supposed to be either pay-per-view or on Fox, whatever. And then they were going to meet. Then they were going to meet and fight. So this should have been Ortiz, basically, this weekend. But, you know, for whatever reason, you know, Andy wasn't ready to go in November. I think we know why. But this is what this was actually Jake Donovan talking about, you know, Luis Ortiz, the headline here to watch Ruiz Ariel, looking forward to the winner. Jake's been doing a great job with the Felix Verdejo, just unbelievable alleged story here about a murder. It's just crazy. But he said, his manager said, I'm excited to see the winner of tonight's fight. I have been assured that the winner is next for Ortiz. I would love nothing more than proving I'm the best Latin heavyweight in the business, is what Ortiz said to you. That's Jake Donovan on the boxing scene. I mean, honestly, sign me up for that fight. I'm all ears for that fight. I like the fight. You put a similar undercard on it, and you're not going to hear anything as far as a complaint from me. We'll get into the summer, you know, some of this undercard stuff. Sebastian Fundora, Jesus Ramos, Abel Ramos, all favorites, all won in, you know, different fashion. What the hell was Figueroa doing? We'll get to that. Soren Parker, Chisora just gassed out. Otherwise, I think he would have won that fight cleanly. Taylor and Jonas was a pretty good fight. I like that fight. Sonny Edwards, like I mentioned, had a really solid win, good performance. He's not a guy that has, a lot of power, but he showed he could box pretty damn well in that. I'm going to go ahead and bring in John to kind of talk us through the last week. And then, of course, Billy Joe Saunders and Canelo fighting this week, and how will that go down? What's going on, John? How you doing, man?
Hey, Chris. Good to be here. Hearing you get things set up reminds me of the good part about boxing is there's no season, so there's always quite a bit of stuff to talk about every week, which is one of the good things about the sport.
Yeah, that is true. That is a very good point. What are your thoughts on hearing Billy Joe's dad talking about this ring size and acting as if, that's the thing. It's kind of like when people complain sometimes about boxing, about just minor little dumb stuff, and you're like, hey, buddy, we got a lot more problems than this. What the hell are you complaining about this for? And to me, it's like, I don't know if they're just trying to rile people up. I don't know if it's a strategy to be like, hey, why not try to get a 22x22? But this whole 20x20 getting bunched in with 16x16 and even 18x18, to sit there and complain about a 20x20, it's just ridiculous. Well, what were your thoughts when you started hearing some of this?
I thought the same thing. It's ridiculous. I never bought for a second that Billy Joe Saunders would pull out of the fight. Too big of a payday at stake. So I thought that was ridiculous. So a couple interesting points on Twitter that I kind of agree with. I think Hearn is kind of, I wouldn't say quietly, of course, because he's a promoter. It's his job to be the opposite of quietly. But I would say persistently is, working his way in with the U.S. with the DAZN deal where they own 40% of Matchroom USA. And why I bring that up is I think Hearn is making his adjustments, making his inroads. But the points I saw on Twitter, I think might be some truth about this, that, in a U.K. promotion, maybe for Saunders, this is just part of, like, if he were to fight in the U.K., doing some type of promotion or something like that. And, in the U.S., this, complaining about ring size might not necessarily be one of the best ways to promote a fight. Maybe there's a little bit of a disconnect there. That's one possibility. I just never thought that there was any true threat that he would pull out. One thing I think, I'm with you. I thought then some people that are maybe even taking this a little too seriously, saying, well, these are the problems with boxing. I agree with you. Not at all. I mean, one of the charms of boxing is that things aren't standardized and weird things can happen. The only areas I'll draw the line is, when it comes to safety, or I'd like one champ a division with some real rankings and some less weight classes. But with that understood, I think the chaos can be different and is one of the good things that separates it from the NFL, where, like you heard for good reason years back when they started calling it the no fun league, or
right,
NBA where they start standardizing everything and MLB where they're starting to tinker with these new standardizations and things like that. I mean, in boxing, the quirkiness is part of the attraction, and I think it even could have appeal, even though it's been a sport around a long time, to some younger generation. Some stats are showing there are some younger people watching, contrary to your belief, that,
I was going to mention that later. Like, we'll talk about that for sure, that new study that came out.
Yeah, you're not restricted like the NFL where there's a rule about everything and you've got celebration rules and all kinds of other stuff. Why Titus in the ring size is because that is the, quirky thing about boxing. You have the legendary stories, of course, where, somebody's got to go over to, Germany to fight, or it could be other countries. And of course, for, foreigners coming over to the U.S., it's the same perspective for them. And these kind of become these stories. And like you've talked about, judging with scorecards and things like that. I mean, whatever judges do, it doesn't really affect what fights we see. So it's all kind of part of the lore and part of the, you know, quirkiness of boxing and the subjectivity of things. So I don't think those things are bad. I think it's what makes boxing unique. It's just when you get to the alphabet organizations and too many champions, too many weight classes, or a safety issue, that's where I think you got to draw the line. But I think on these other things, it can just be part of the boxing charm. But I never seriously thought Saunders would pull out. Too big of a payday at stake.
Yeah, and you're right. I did start to see some folks who I even respect start tweeting, and see, this is why boxing's falling behind, is because we don't even know what – like, come on, casuals don't know what a 20 by 20, 18 by 18 – they don't know that stuff, and they don't care. Like, it just – you could – whatever. They'd actually probably like a 10 by 10. You know what I mean? So it just –
exactly. That's what I'm saying.
It's
right.
Just silly.
It is. It's just silly. Definitely a silly non-issue. And I don't care if the – what if the rig is 18 by 18 or 20 by 20 or 26 by 26. All you have to do is watch Billy Joe Saunders fight throughout his career, and you know he's going to be on his bicycle. If the ring was 5x5, he'd be trying to bike his way around it.
Right. And let's get into some in-the-ring stuff since we're talking about the dimensions of the ring. Andy Ruiz, like I said, I thought in the first round he was jabbing nice, looked decently coming forward, and then that overhand right just, you know, caught him out of position with his left hand down. It just, I don't know. What'd you think of the fight overall? I mean, that second and third round, the amount of exchanges just in that moment, that was pretty exciting out of nowhere. I didn't expect it to be that early.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't like a wild brawl every second of 12 rounds, but it was a good fight with good entertainment value, with Areola having better moments than would have been expected. He definitely hurt Ruiz, dropped him once. Like you said, Ruiz didn't look hurt that bad, but it was a legit knockdown. And Areola's always been a good puncher. And then, you know, Areola hurt him bad after that. And, you know, Areola was in great shape. Ruiz was in better shape than he was for the second Joshua fight. You know, Areola, of course, is 40 years old. But the difference in this fight was you know, if Areola, of course, he's in with a different guy, but I think you could still see this, and this is the problem with age, is in great shape as Areola was, and for his age, he fought extremely well against, you know, a legit top five heavyweight, Andy Ruiz. But with all that said, if this was even the Areola that was in against Konatsky with that punch volume, and Areola's always been a really good finisher. That's one thing about Areola. If you've watched his entire career, which, you know, you and I have, and people that have been following the sport a long time, that guy was a finisher. And one thing I thought in those early rounds, in those two moments, both times, based on the Chris Areola, even who was heavier in the past, the one thing the dude could always do was finish with combinations. And, you know, if he would hurt a guy, I mean, usually the dude was done. And that flashed through my mind, and I just said, you know, I know he's in with Andy Ruiz, but this is where you're seeing a 40-year-old Areola, even though he's in great shape at 228, a career low, to his credit, and fighting well. I mean, this is the third fight in a row he's fought well. So he still fought well in this fight overall, but that's where I was looking and saying, you know, man, even the Areola against Konatsky, who had that punch volume, the way he'd finished throughout his career, I thought he might have finished Ruiz in those moments early if he wasn't the 40-year-old Areola. And then, like you said, Ruiz got a chance to settle in. And I think I'm sensing you thought maybe Ruiz looked a little better than I did. And I know a lot of people I respect who agree with you, but my take on it was I was not particularly impressed by Ruiz Saturday night. You know, he was in trouble early. Against the 40-year-old Areola, even though Areola was in great shape. And really, this is Areola's third good fight in a row, really. He beat that undefeated guy who wasn't really any good, but he knocked him out. He blew him away, fought very well against Konatsky. And he really fought very well overall Saturday night, even though he clearly lost. I mean, I thought Ruiz took over in the second half of the fight, like you said about the scoring. I mean, you know, an 8-4 type thing, 9-3, and then Ariola had the round with a knockdown. You know, that type of a thing was in line. But no doubt Ruiz won the fight. But I just didn't think he looked that good. To me, here's what concerned me about Ruiz, Chris, is, you know, even though this is a lesser type opposition, still, it was a guy who at one point was a little bit on the fringe, even though Parker blew him away. You know, he failed when he stepped up. But, you know, Ruiz had been off a long time. And when you saw him in that fight against Dimitrenko, when he came back, his first PBC fight, I mean, the dude looked sharp. I mean, he was moving his head. He had hand speed. He was banging the body. I know he's in with a tougher opponent in Ariola, even at 40, but tougher in a lot of ways, including mentally. But still, with that said, I just didn't even see that guy, you know? So, okay, you know, I'm thinking Reynoso, we're giving him a lot of credit lately, deservedly so, but I didn't see anything that he brought to the table in this first outing with Ruiz. Then somebody pointed out to me on Twitter who was being contrarian, but made a decent point. You know, Valdez hadn't been looking very good for a long time with Reynoso either, and then exploded against Burchell. True. Okay. You know, maybe as more time goes by, but then again, I'm just saying we didn't see it. To me, I didn't see it Saturday night. I just saw Ruiz, the same old Ruiz. Not the Ruiz who was as bad as he was against Joshua in the second fight, but that's why I pointed out a fight that's lesser known, but to me was significant. You know, he was off that long layoff when he broke the top rank deal, and he really, you know, he really looked sharp to me there. Like, that was to me like the Andy Ruiz who you want to see, you know, moving his head, banging the body. That's what he talked about, like he wanted to be with Reynoso. But I saw that with Manny Robles in the Dimitrenko fight and the Joshua 1 fight. But to me, I didn't see that Saturday night. You know, I saw a better version than Joshua 2, but not what I wanted to see.
You know, that's a great example. And of course, like you mentioned, you know, people are going to go, well, dude, that's a different guy and all that. But I mean, that is a good point. He was more economical with his punches, but it seemed like he was more active in general and throwing, like, just harder, straighter, maybe even quicker. Yeah, really the jab and the cleanup left hook I thought looked pretty good. I liked the jab and the right hand to the stomach, but he didn't do it enough, and it did seem like he was trying to just bang him out, exchange. Maybe that was him being in front of a crowd like that. Where he wanted to just try to knock him out. And you're right. I mean, even before that, when he would be out of shape or inconsistent, you know, it's not like he was just this fundamentally great, you know, fighter. He would just had fast hand, had good power, and would try to ox you out for the most part, but, you know, still use a standard jab and everything. So, yeah, that's a good point. That's a good example. Because like you said, it's not like, Ariola's still, you know, a gatekeeper at heavyweight still. It's not like you're a fringe contender, at least, you know, something like that. And I'd like to see more of him, too, if he's up for it anyway. But, yeah, that's a good point.
I think he'll be back.
What do you think about the weight loss? Do you think that played into some kind of
I think those are good points. You know, you pointed it out, and I think other people have, and you're right. I've kind of discounted it a little bit with both guys. But you can't. I mean, there's people I respect, and including yourself, who point out, you know, when you got that kind of weight loss, you know, you can be a little bit weak. Now, these guys are heavyweights. They didn't have to make weight, but one of my own personal learning experience about this in just terms of learning from somebody in it was actually – a real late night discussion. I think it was even on Facebook quite a few years back, but somehow I actually got to talk with Kelly Pavlik himself on Facebook. And I was talking with him about the Martinez fight, and how the discussion came up was, you know, if you remember that fight, you know, Pavlik started a little slow, then he came on really strong. And looked to me like he was going to pull out that fight. He got cut bad, and then he seemed like he got tired. And watching that fight, my thinking always was, you know, we're human beings, and things can drain you. And, you know, he had a bad cut, and it just seemed like kind of got drained from the cut. And he said, John, to tell you the truth, he said it wasn't the cut. He said, I had so much trouble making weight. He said, I was laying in bed with my wife the night before the fight. And I said, and he said, I said to her, I got nothing. There's just nothing left for me tomorrow night in that fight. I'm just too drained.
And, right.
You know, that's a middleweight. It's not a, you know, he had to make weight, and it's not heavy weight. But these are guys off of big weight losses. And, you know, people who've been in the game a long time, they do look at that like, you know, you can just sometimes lose a little too much. I mean, both of these guys had lost a lot of weight. I mean, Arriola did not have – I mean, he's 40, so you got to look at that with him. But, yeah, he was not able to finish like he was against Konatsky, even though he clearly lost that fight as well, but it was a great fight. And you know, Ruiz did finish – he finished more strongly, but he had lost a lot of weight as well. But, you know, Ruiz has actually even been a little bit lower for fights. So he was not at, like, a career low, but he was way down from that second Joshua debacle. So could be a factor, and we'll see, but – I mean, Andy Ruiz is clearly top 10. There's no doubt about it. And there's, you know, a lot of guys he's got the potential to beat. But I myself was looking for a little bit more. I just think against the 40-year-old Arriola, like you pointed out, you know, he's kind of somewhere between fringe contender and gatekeeper. But yeah. I did want to jump in before. I always worry about these guys' health at this point, but it is ultimately their decision. But I do have to say, with the money out there, especially at heavyweight, Chris Arriola, even at 40, he has done enough in his last three fights, including this one last Saturday against Ruiz, that, you know, how really, with the money out there at heavyweight, is he not going to continue? I mean, he's going to continue. So, you know, he's got to get that shoulder, whatever was going on there, taken care of, which you're going to have that more orthopedically when you get into your 40s. But you got to figure he'll be back, and somebody else we'll probably mention when we go over to over last week's action. It's the same kind of thing with Derek Chisora at 37. I mean, the guy's doing enough. He's fringed to gatekeeper, but with the money at heavyweight, he's competitive. He's already said he's going to continue, but I think Arriola will come to the same conclusion.
Yeah, and I remember him saying after that Koznoski fight that, you know, if I lose this fight, I'm going to retire. But when you watch the fight, you're like, dude, I mean, if you're up for it, you probably shouldn't, because, you know, this is that you performed really well, and he didn't have to, you know, obviously he's had weight issues, we all know that, but this time he didn't have to lose a lot of weight, because you could already see he was kind of in shape. You saw him even, you know, 9 months ago in interviews, you'd see him be like, wow. So he's just hanging around a gym, he's staying active somewhat, whereas Ruiz literally had to drop a bunch of weight. So we'll see. What do you think of a fight with him and Luis Ortiz? Or do you think he should just try to get the Wilder fight, you know, at the end of the year and just go for the big fight just in case Ortiz does catch him? How do you what do you think there?
I agree with people that, you know, Ruiz Wilder would be a good sell, but I feel like Wilder's got to, you know, he's got that arbitration clause in his contract for the Fury fights. I need to see how that plays out. I need closure that he's not going to be fighting Fury again, because if that's not closed, you know, you hate for this, but it's just the way boxing works a lot of time nowadays. You know, that's where if you're Wilder and they're really, you're looking at that third Fury fight, or maybe if there is a settlement to that arbitration deal where he gets the winner of Joshua Fury or something like that.
Right.
You know, then really, is he going to fight Andy Ruiz, or would he be then you, when you hear Charles Martin's name come up, that could be a reality. If it was that type of situation and Wilder needs to, you know, stay active and buy some time, because he's been out for a while now. But then you have another scenario, which I think people are looking at, and I don't need the alphabet thing. I know you don't. Why some fans do, I don't get it. But I just say this because boxing is comical like that. I'm sure if they decided they were going to go right to Wilder Ruiz, they could pull some belt out of somewhere. You know,
the
WBA regular could be stripped, or the WBC interim, or, you know, and then some fans that care about the alphabet will scream, no, no. But, you know damn well that they could come up with something and the alphabets don't care as long as they get a check. So, you know, I mean, it'll be something. I don't need that. You don't need that. But for some odd reason, some people do. But then getting back to Ortiz Ruiz, it would seem to be a likely scenario. I mean, I need at this point, I mean, Luis Ortiz performed well in both Wilder fights. So these people have to track from him. You can't forget that. I mean, he came close in different ways to winning both fights, very close. So he's shown that, you know, you can't detract. But what I do have to agree with some of the detractors on, even considering there's no proof that he's older than he says he is, like people make out. There's no proof of that. So, you know, but we do know, even by his own account, he's in his 40s. What I'm getting to
right.
is he's got to fight somebody. I mean, you know, even if he's in his 40s, he's got to fight somebody. I mean, he can't just keep hanging around and, you know, not fight anybody except for Wilder.
Yeah,
he's got to fight. So for him, even though it might be tough, risky, so to speak, I need to see him fight somebody. And, you know, for Andy Ruiz, next step after Areola, you know, it'd be okay, except he's fighting another guy in his 40s. But you would think at this point, I mean, outside of getting stopped by Wilder those two times, which, you know, those were brutal KOs, but Ortiz hasn't taken any other punishment. You know, Areola has been in a lot of wars, a lot of fights where he took punishment. So, you know, he's a little fresher than Areola, so it might be interesting. I mean, you would think that would be a fight Ruiz should be able to win pretty comfortably, but Ortiz has enough power and skill. It's an interesting fight. I mean, it's a legit top 10 fight. I'd certainly be watching it. I do feel, you know, Ortiz needs to fight somebody, and really it'd be good to see Ruiz in against a legit top 10 guy next time out. So, yeah, I mean, I'm on board if that is going to happen next. It seems reasonable.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty good challenge. Let's go through all three undercard fights that were on the card. Abel Ramos, it took a little while to adjust to what Figueroa was doing, whatever. I mean, we've seen herky-jerky stuff, and he does. He always had this weird aggressive style, but he was freezing and staying in one spot. He was squaring up. He was... You know, he's always had a weird style in a sense, but he took it to the extreme. It took Abel a little time to catch up to it, but once he did, he didn't lose too many rounds. You know, he was aiming with that jab, landing the right hands, and overall started digging to the body, destroying the body down the stretch, and that's what ultimately did it. Jesus Ramos had his jab going and looked pretty damn good against a solid fighter in Javier Molina, especially only being, what, his 16th fight for Jesus. I thought he looked really good. And then, obviously, we'll start with, though, Sebastian Fundora and Jorge Cota. This one turned out pretty much how we thought it would be. Some folks had a problem with the stoppage, and I've talked to a couple of people about it, Lukey Boxing last night, actually, or two nights ago, about... You know, they just stopped it at the wrong moment. Had they stopped it like 20 seconds before that, when you clearly saw he was just really, really hurt, I don't think anyone would have complained too much. But when he lands a good punch, it's always the first reaction to be like, dude, what the hell? And obviously, even when the ref kind of banged into him a little bit, like to kind of break it up, you could see him stumbling pretty bad. But that was a firefight, and had the ref let it go, maybe it would have been a knockout that round. Maybe it would have been a couple of rounds. Maybe he just would have stopped it halfway through the next round. But it had shades of like a brawl, like a top 10 brawl of the year. What did you think of the fight itself and the stoppage in Fundora, how he looked? And then we can go over, you know, both Ramoses too.
I thought Fundora looked great. I mean, this is one that I'm even higher on Fundora than, no pun intended, than some people were who saw the fight. I never normally like a fight stopped, you know, when a guy is throwing back. But, I mean, to me, Cota was just taking vicious shot after vicious shot. And, you know, Fundora, you know, I was so impressed. It's really almost a unique thing to him, even after all the decades you watch boxing or you go back all the years. I mean, here's a guy at that enormous height for, you know, he weighed 152.5 pounds. And, you know, the guy's like 6'6". And he found a way without standing at range, but getting close, but he then sets himself in a position where he gets full leverage on those shots. And, you know, you think of guys like, I'm not saying he's the same type of puncher, but, I mean, the point here is, well, we just mentioned a guy before, like a Kelly Pavlik, a Thomas Hearns. What I'm talking about is Bob Foster, you know, Michael Spinks. We know how tall, lanky guys, just with the physics, you know, get a whip action on their punch. And oftentimes in boxing, they are the biggest punchers, even though they will have a skinny, lanky type looking body. And that has to do with all with the leverage. It's like a whip. So what I'm saying is, you got Fundora, who's got that kind of leverage, but has found a technique, a way of doing it in close. That's his style. But you saw that in the Cota fight, and you've been seeing it in his last few fights. I mean, he gets that leverage on these guys, you know, against Gallimore, you know, the fight before that, against the guy that came down from super middle. And then, you know, this fight against Cota, where he's just whipping those shots with leverage, uppercuts, firing down on guys, all with leverage up close, and it's just like a barrage that they can't withstand. They can't take that many big power shots in succession like that from a guy that lanky and tall up close like that. And, you know, I mean, you just see, you just look at the reaction on these guys when you see them getting hit. So I was very impressed with
Fundora's performance. And he can take a good shot, too.
Yeah, I mean, Cota's a puncher. That's the thing also is, you know, there's been some debate about opposition. Of course, he's working his way up. But, you know, one thing about Gallimore and Cota, they may be limited, but these are guys that can crack. I mean, this is not like the feather – he's going in with feather-fisted guys. They right. may have their limitations, but these guys can bang. And Gallimore's always had a chin. You know, Fundora was the first guy to stop him. Now, you know, Cota's been stopped early a couple times by, you know, upper-level competition in Charlo and Lubin. But he can punch, and Gallimore can punch, and Fundora walked through that fire, was never in trouble or anything like that. You know, he had the draw with Jermonte Clark, but that's a style-type thing where Clark's a boxer who's tall. You know, he's 6'1.5" at junior middle. So, you know, he's a tall guy. That's a little bit of an aberration to me there where I'm not worried about it. You know, it was just happened to be a very tall boxer. You know, how many very tall boxers is Fundora going to run into at 154 pounds? Hardly any. So I thought it was a very impressive performance. I think, you know, he's a threat, you know, really, you know, outside of, you know, Charlo with his power, you know, he may be a cut above, but, and, you know, Castaño's looked very good too, but Castaño's not physically big. You know, I think Fedor is going to be a threat to everyone pretty much outside of, you know, maybe Charlo. And what I wanted to kind of bring up and get kind of your thoughts on it, Chris, is for some reason, I guess at the level they're both at, it kind of jumps out. But to me, this is one some people are getting wrong. Like, you know, Tim Zhu, you know, looked good against a Dennis Hogan, who's 36 and can't punch. A Jeff Horn, you know, who got taken out by Zarafa, you know, one fight before that, you know, really – you know, got a gift against, you know, he was out on his feet in the ninth round. He went the distance, but he got a gift. You know, yeah, I know maybe Gallimore and Cota aren't, you know, Marvin Hagler and Thomas Hearns, but, you know, I don't see how a Tim Zhu, and it's all going to be theoretical, because I think they're going to just try to make money off of Tim Zhu in Australia. But I guess what I want to kind of get into the discussion and get your thoughts is, to me, you know, I can't imagine a Tim Zhu handling a Fundora. I mean, I just think Fundora would steamroll him. And I don't think they're going to fight anyway because of boxing politics. But I just think for comparison, and why I want to say that now, too, is because I think Tim Zhu is going to be fighting in Australia against guys that aren't that good. And, you know, after Charlo Castaño, a WBO belt will get stripped, you know, the alphabets, and Tim Tszyu will be fighting,
right,
you know, some lesser threats in Australia. And next thing you know, we'll be talking about he's got six alphabet title defenses in Australia, and people will be saying he's great. And Fundora is going to be running a gauntlet, you know what I mean, because PBC's got everybody at 154 pounds. So,
right,
you know, and I think he'll be able to do it, but I mean, he's going to be in some wars running the gauntlet. I think he's got the talent, like I said, except, you know, you got Charlo out there, but I think everybody else, he's going to have a, and maybe even Charlo at some point, but I'm not going to say that yet. But I mean, I think the other guys, he's going to have a crack at in the near future and the crack at beating him. But I don't think Tim Tszyu is going to be running that kind of gauntlet in Australia.
Yeah, I could definitely see that, especially how young he is. I think it's a very competitive fight, though. I don't think Fundora just runs him over, personally. But I could see that exact scenario turning out, like you said, especially the WBO. I guess we could throw in the WBA as well, but I think they got the second guy in there anyway, so with Lara. So, you know, yeah, I could see that where you're just stacking up the pretty good wins or whatever, and they talk about, you know, until they can get it full-blown and the travel's okay, they do have maybe some sizable money over there, but it's just talk right now. But, yeah, I could see him getting a belt on a second-tier level and then getting several defenses before he fights someone, let's say, in the top five because of that, the name recognition. He's going to start to draw some more crowds over there. So I could see that for sure. And Fundora, it sounds like he may be, you know, lining up for the Lubin Rosario fight, the winner of that, because that's possibly part of the title eliminator thing, to become a mandatory for that. And that would be cool because that way, you know, I'm not just going to give Lubin the win over Rosario, as we know, but let's say that happened. Then it would be, because not a lot, you know, people want to see him against a Rosario Lubin and against a Fundora and stuff like that before they see the Charlo fight again, just because of how that Charlo fight ended so quick, you know. So, yeah, you're right. I think Fundora, I mean, I love the way he's been matched. They haven't been babying him. He had a draw, and they kept going. And, you know, his style, you know, can someone catch up to it? It's a strange style because of that reach, and he's not afraid to mix it up. He can get close. Maybe he'll get some Navarrete or Navarrete, you know, uppercuts from a distance even more like that. But, you know, I remember, I mean, Clark at times even, Cota, and even a Minneapolis fighter, for the first, like, round and a half, had gotten all the way into his chest and hit him with clean shots and wasn't getting as clipped as much. Now, he ended up getting knocked out, and that's the thing with Fundora, right? But I love the way they're moving him. They're not babying him at all, and he's responding. He responded right here. But I think Hogan and Fundora, although I don't think it would happen, I see it maybe closer than you. I don't see him running him over or whatever, but I do like the way they're moving Fundora, but yeah, that five or six, you know, defense overseas, that does make a lot of sense, especially, like I said, to reiterate that youth that they'll probably want to build up.
Yeah, I think I kind of wanted to get that out of the way now because it's what I see coming, and I don't want to be saying it after the fact and then say, oh, you're having sour grapes because Tim Tszyu is getting these wins of his WBO belt, or, you know, I mean,
right.
I want to say that because you see that coming. It's politics. It doesn't mean Tszyu personally is afraid or anything like that. I don't think the fighters are in these situations. It's just, you know, maximizing dollars and boxing politics and things like that. But, you know, I want to say it now because I think, yeah, we could be heading for a scenario where we're going to see Tim Tszyu over there in an alternative universe for a while, and Fundora maybe, like you said, he might be going through the Lubin Rosario winner next, and a lot of the guys that are more talented that PBC's got available for him to fight, while Tszyu won't be doing that. He won't be taking that route.
Yeah, that's for sure. And then both Ramos here, uncle and nephew. You know, Omar Figueroa, I actually gave him the first round just because he was aggressive and landed punches, but that was about it. The third was close. There may have, I don't think that was about it. That was about it. But once Abel kind of got his jab, like, okay, where are you going, dude? Let me just, okay, I can at least hit you with a jab. Then I think with, you know, the hooks to the body with both hands seemed to come out. That right hand finally really started landed. What'd you think of Ramos, you know, overall? I mean, the guy, talk about like a just a solid resume. When you look at his resume, whatever, win, lose, or draw, it is very, very solid when you go down the stretch of names. But I thought he put it all together clearly against a guy that doesn't have much left of his career, and clearly those body shots caught up to him. That's why Diaz threw in the tall. But what'd you think of Abel Ramos? Where do you want, maybe want to see him go? And then Jesus Ramos was nice and sturdy, speaking of fundamentals too, but applied pressure as well against Javier Molina.
Yeah, really good performance for Abel Ramos. The good thing about him is, and you don't see it that often, you know, when a guy's more into his career, and sometimes it's a result of who they're fighting and not necessarily improvement. You got to make the separation. But I think in his case, he's a guy that really has gotten better. He was always decent, but you've seen the guy's offense just get better and better. He's looked stronger as his career goes on physically, as he's gone up from 140 pounds to 147. The offense has just gotten better and better. He's performed well against tough competition and always had a credible showing. I mean, you know, he came off a fight before this against Ugas where I was in the camp where I didn't think it was as close as the judges had it. But, you know, Ugas is a very tricky guy to fight. He's got a lot of skill, and he was certainly competitive. You know, he had Brancic in serious trouble. That was a war before he lost that fight, and that was when he was really under the radar screen. That's kind of where I started to really notice him. Because he had Brancic in some trouble in that fight, and it was a brawl. He lost it, but you know, it was like, hey, this guy's got a little something here. And you know, Perella, I thought, you know, Perella had him beat. I thought that was a terrible call by Jack Reese in stopping the fight. But with that said, the power shots he knocked Perella down with twice in the last round were real. And again, that was that offense coming out. And It came out in full against Figueroa. I also gave Figueroa the first round, but that was his high water mark. It was awful after that. And as good as Abel Ramos was, you know, Omar Figueroa was that bad. He looked to me like a guy who knew he had nothing left, and that's why he was doing the crazy defense, because the natural ability was just eroded at that point. From you know, the neglect of being out of shape, the wars he was in, the layoffs, and you know, you got to say this just because it is public record, and let's face it, you know, if you know about these types of things, even from sort of a scientific level, it's not speculating. I mean, you know, the guy's had DUI problems, so you know why I mention that is you know the weight, you start to think about the drinking, things like that, and. It's just sad to see, because it all caught up with the guy. It's been catching up with the guy. Didn't look good against Ugas, even though Ugas is a tough opponent. And, you know, he's had layoffs recently, and this was just the end of the line to me. I mean, you could see, I did tweet it out right after that. You know, I gave him the first round also, but then, you know, within a round or two, you were like, this is the end of the line. I mean, he's got nothing. The combinations were gone. The guy always had good pop. The pop was gone. I mean, even though it was another guy he was fighting who was at the end of the line, it was still one of those things where you could still see the flashes of positivity from Figueroa that it was worth noting. Like, you know, the last time he looked good was against, you know, Robert Guerrero. You saw the old combinations. You saw the pop. And then you were hopeful, hey, he's at welterweight. PBC's got all these welterweights. Maybe, you know, he can make another run out of it, get his act together. But that didn't happen. You know, it just didn't happen. Because even though he clearly won the fight, you know, Chris, when you think back, even when he was in the Fox fight against, you know, John Molina. He clearly won the fight, but he didn't look good. You know, he wasn't putting any hurt on Molina. The combinations weren't there. To me, you could start to see, even with the clear win, you know, it just, you could see the downslide. It continued against Ugas, and I just think it's unfortunate. You hate to say it. You hate to see it. You wish it wasn't the case, but certainly looks like a guy that's at the end of the line.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, when he walked over and, you know, was spitting up blood or whatever, I mean, it was just like, yeah, dude, this guy's gone, man. It's done, and we'll see, like, you know, we'll see how, you know, this is where it can get ugly for some, you know, sometimes if a fighter wants to keep going and then he just becomes a gatekeeper and, you know, at best, and it gets ugly, no doubt about it. How about his nephew, we're talking about Abel, Jesus Ramos, who has a lot of people excited. You know, he was fundamentally bringing pressure, I thought. What'd you think of Jesus Ramos's performance?
I thought it was good. I thought there was a scenario where it would play out like it was, because Javier Molina is so legitimately tricky and has very high amateur pedigree as a U.S. Olympian. Never really been in trouble in any fights. You know, very skilled, just doesn't have lost a good competition. You know, guys like Jamal James, Pedraza. So I saw this possible scenario. With that said, I had hoped for kind of an A-plus scenario for Jesus Ramos. Nothing really to get critical about, but, you know, I thought with the power advantage he had over Molina, even as tricky as Molina is, Molina, you know, didn't hurt him and can't hurt him. I thought he kind of took his foot off the gas a little bit in the second half of the fight, more so than was necessary. He's 20 years old. It was a big step up legitimately against a very tricky guy. Frankly, the type of step up you don't see a lot of young fighters taking, because Molina had that pedigree and he's tricky and he hasn't been stopped before, still wasn't stopped, didn't get real badly hurt. So certainly a good win for Jesus Ramos. He's certainly on track. I had hoped for a little more, but you don't want to be overly critical. But I was a little bit slightly perplexed at why he took his foot off the gas during the second half of the fight. You know, of course, he's not used to going that long. It's only the second time he's gone the distance. But I think with the talent I feel he has, and he's got that physical size, I just would have liked to seen him try to explode on Molina a little bit more down the stretch and get him out of there. But outside of that, you know, it was basically a shutout win, maybe lost a round. So there's not a lot to criticize there, a big step up. I mean, he's one of the top welterweights in the game. Nothing's going to change that. But maybe it was like an A or an A-minus performance instead of an A-plus performance. That's all.
Yeah, that's fair. I think that's fair. And that's part of being a young fighter at times. And maybe he'll look at that tape and realize that he could have let his hands go a little bit more. And because sometimes it's the opposite when they're young, right? They want to always let their hands go. And you're like, hey, dude, don't let your hands go just yet. You still got some work. You got to wear them down. I think you put that very well. You know, obviously the Eduardo Ramirez fight, that he got a win. But that was like a banger in a short amount of time. Arislani Lara, you know, knocked out Cornflake with one shot. Hopefully he gets a big fight here now. I'm assuming he's going to. And obviously Chisora Parker, you know, what do you think of some of that action? We can include the woman's fight, too, with Taylor and Jonas, too. What did you think of that, just kind of wrapping up the rest of the weekend? What did you think of some of that action overseas as well?
Yeah, let me just touch on that. First, you know, on the Eduardo Ramirez, he's kind of not quite as good to me the way he's developed, but it reminds me a little bit of the description just had of Abel Ramos. You know, he's been in with some tough competition. He stepped up, fought Lee Selby in the UK, even though Lee Selby was, you know, top of the featherweight, near the top of the featherweight division at the time. Didn't think, even though Ramirez lasted distance, didn't think Ramirez looked all that good. You know, nothing stood out. about him. But you know, you saw his offense start to develop, and that's where, like I said about Abel Ramos before, you know, you see that with Ramirez, especially in his last few fights, and legit offense developing. I mean, it's developed. You know, Abel Ramos is in a tougher division, so he's fighting to, you know, maybe crack the welterweight legit top 10. Eduardo Ramirez at featherweight, 126 pounds, division not as strong. He's actually cracking that legitimately. So a lot of improvement for him. He's made himself a guy that you want to see. Lara, you know, full disclosure, I wasn't picking Cornflake or anything, but I thought Cornflake, he'd done a little better against boxers. You know, Lara not normally being aggressive, I thought maybe Cornflake could hang around some rounds, use his height, use his boxing ability, even though Lara is extremely skilled. And, you know, Lara, 38, maybe hang around, maybe make it interesting, get it to a decision. But, of course, the exact opposite happened. I was shocked. Even though it was Cornflake, LaManna, I was still shocked at how aggressively Lara came out. I got to give him some credit there because I've always felt Lara and the guy who's going to be fighting this weekend, Billy Joe Saunders, even Caleb Plant with the left hook. You know, sometimes you have a boxer who can't punch. These are boxers who can punch but choose to fight in a more cautious style and not punch a lot of times. You know, there's a difference. And Lara came out, you know, banging. He pushed Cornflake against the ropes early. And then when it went back to the center of the ring, he was unloading bombs, one which, you know, caught him and ended it. So I got to give Lara credit, even with LaManna, for being that aggressive. You know, even if he's got an overmatched opponent, again, he got rid of him so quickly. I think that was an impressive performance in that sense, Lara, using that power, because he did fight in a more flat-footed style against Castaño, too, and that was a pretty entertaining fight, a legit draw. The guy's still fighting very well for the age of 38, so got to mention that. Parker and Chisora, I think the fight was a little more entertaining than I thought it might be. Parker with Andy Lee, only slightly better than he has been. Not much. You know, he got dropped legitimately early. And then the part where he was a hair better than he usually is he went into same old Parker stuff where then he was jabbing and grabbing. But Lee had him throwing some left hooks and right hands in there. Got some of those in on Chisora. I thought that was a little better than the Parker we see. Not dramatically, though. On the other hand, you know, Buddy McGirt's, you know, he's my favorite strategist trainer probably in the game right now. You know, you see him come in with lesser guys and things like that or reclamation projects, and he's always got a strategy. And even though it looked like the same Chisora, but still, you listen the way McGirt handles the corner, gives the instructions, comes up with a game plan, gets the fighters to listen to him. Chisora was totally tuned in and listening to him. And you look at how close Chisora made that fight. I did think Parker won it. A lot of people were saying they thought Chisora won. I personally didn't see that even with the knockdown. I thought Parker came on enough to win it. But Chisora did fight well. He was in that fight the whole way. You know, McGirt was constantly telling him, which worked. In the long run, it did work. He said, look, you know, just keep getting to him at that body. You know, keep going with that two hands to the body. And then when you can throw either hand, land on something, do it. McGirt kept telling him, when Chisora got away from him, he kept saying, I want you to just suck it up, you know, get in there, throw those two hands to the body. And look, he had a lot of people, you know, thinking he won the fight, and it was a close fight on the scorecards, and he will be able to go on from there. So I think it was another, you know, Buddy McGirt to me. You know, you look at trainers who were with new guys over the weekend, Reynoso with Ruiz, Andy Lee with Parker, McGirt with Chisora. Even if people didn't notice difference in Chisora, I think if you look at all the corner work and what the guys ended up bringing, I think McGirt gets the new trainer performance of the weekend where we had the three new looks. So I like that. You know, Taylor and Jonas, I mean, I always enjoy watching Katie Taylor fight. I think she's got good skills, you know, good hand speed. She's in entertaining fights. And, you know, I thought she did enough to win the fight. I thought it was a good fight. You know, and I thought she won it. I mean, she brings good skills in, and she's entertaining to watch. Of course, you know, she's in her mid-30s, though, already. I mean, she turned pro late. So, you know, even the women's boxing, where I just say that, where there might not be as much depth, still, even though Katie Taylor's at the top of the sport right now on the women's side, you know, she might, what big fight she has out there for herself, she might need to take now. So if they can be made.
Yeah, she's been in a lot of two-way fights, if you think about it, you know.
Yep.
She's definitely lost plenty of rounds taking some punishment.
Yeah, you know, this Pursoon fights, which were good fights, and this fight with Jonas. So, you know, again, you got the promotional thing. She's with Matchroom, and, you know, you got Michaela Mayer with Top Rank. Michaela Mayer's at 130, but she's very tall. You know, Taylor's at 135. I would like to see that fight, but, you know, I mean, is there enough money out there to make a fight like that? I mean, you know, we on the men's side, we see fights like that not happening all the time. I just don't know if they could make a fight like that.
Yeah, that's a good call. You know, Chisora, those first few rounds, probably the first 3 out of 4 I gave to Chisora, you know, he would that over the, obviously that over the top right hand that knocked him down, but he definitely was just, I mean, overhand right seemed like his best punch beyond, like you said, the body work. And it seemed like Parker in those first, maybe he won the third, but he was doing a lot of holding and not doing a whole lot, that whipping right hand. But then he started jabbing, like you said, well, and started actually throwing combinations. And by, you know, the eighth round, he was creating enough distance, enough space where he was getting, you know, hook combinations off along with that jab. And then brought the right hand later. I had it about 7-5 for Parker. I could maybe see 6-6, but 114, 113. For Parker, but clearly Chisora halfway through the fight was breathing heavy, and he could barely even take those long deep breaths that you're supposed to. I think they even asked him, like, hey, can you, and he tried, but you could tell that has something to do with it. I think they said he was, what, 8 or 10 pounds heavier than his last fight or something like that, so I think some of that caught up to him. I think he was in tip-top shape. Not that he was in bad shape, but clearly when you're breathing that heavy, it was like, wow, dude. And I know you're doing a good chunk of the work. I get that part. But and I did give him the last round, but the last chunk of rounds, he definitely looked like, especially in the 8th, 9th, and 10th, he looked like he was gassed out, and maybe that was part of it. But also credit to Parker for kind of doing a little bit more than he normally does. I would have liked, you know, the ref to say something about some of those clinches because they were getting excessive, but, you know, it is what it is. That's boxing. Conlon had a, you know, one as well. Through like 4 or 5 rounds, he was winning, but it definitely wasn't impressive. It did seem like that Bolivata or whatever his name is started to land some good shots on the inside. Started becoming more competitive, like 6 through 8 somewhere there. And definitely Conlon didn't finish strong. That's for sure. He didn't finish the stronger of the two. He ended up winning 117, 112, 115, 114. And then there was a draw in there. Dimitri Bivol also won a clean decision for the most part. There was a 115, 114, 115, 113, but another 118, 110. Basically just jabbing. I didn't actually see the whole fight now that I think about it. And then I mentioned Sonny Edwards too. There was a lot of fights from the weekend. Any other items you'd like to talk about before maybe some of those fights I just mentioned or maybe start to get into this Canelo Billy Joe Saunders stuff?
I just mentioned I was not impressed with Bivol's performance. I mean, you know, he's in the pros.
Yeah,
I mean, the guy's skilled, but, you know, he's fighting a guy who's not anywhere near legit top 10 in Craig Richards, even though Richards performed respectably. You know, we've talked about this before, Chris, and he's one of those guys, and Bivol, I've seen times when he doesn't do it, but it's getting fewer and farther between. I mean, you know, he's actually regressed more to his amateur self, you know, as time's going on. And even though he keeps winning, I mean,
Definitely. You
saw that type of fight he fought Saturday. I mean, that's the type of thing that it might catch up to him. He's just fighting too amateurishly. And you know, that used to mean something different 40 and 50 years ago when all the amateur fights were brawls. But when we talk about it nowadays, you know, we mean an amateur style, like that punch counting that became in vogue for decades, unfortunately, that they now got rid of, where you jump in and out, you try to touch the guy with the surface of your glove with a punch, and you jump out, because those guys, especially in the old Soviet block system, I mean, you see it, and you saw it, you know, you see it with the Cubans, which, you know, of course, was basically part of the old Soviet block system too. You know, even though they had even more success with their fighters, you know, that jumping in and out. In other words, you know, you touch the guy and you jump away. It's just not a pro style. You know, you're not trying to land any power shots. You're not trying to get the guy out of there. And it becomes an annoying style to watch, frankly, because it hurt amateur boxing. I mean, that's when amateur boxing in the U.S., at least, you know, just fell off of TV, even in the Olympics. I mean, it's on TV, but it went on to, like, MSNBC at 2 o'clock in the morning from, you know, being on a prime slot, the Olympics on NBC.
Right, now you got to stream
ABC.
It.
Yeah, you got to stream it, right. So, you know, don't tell me there's not differences. In other words, and that's when that came to be. So, you know, when I see guys fighting like Bivol like that, and he's not the only one, you know, we'll point him out from time to time. You know, there were a few, you know, some of the Americans fell victim to it. A lot of them, it got them turning pro earlier and things like that. But again, just getting to the point, I did not like the performance. I mean, he clearly won the fight, I thought. But, you know, Richards did come on strong. Some people are saying, no, he didn't. But, you know, I'll tell you, at least those last three rounds, Bivol was fighting so amateurly, and Richards started gaining some confidence and throwing some power shots. He was taking those rounds. So, you know, not a good performance to me from Bivol. And, you know, for Sonny Edwards, a great performance in the sense, too many weight classes down there. Why say that? Not to take away from Sonny, but just that he's an unranked guy, beats a guy who, you know, everybody had
right
at the top flyweight division, just because, you know, you got a 108, you got a 115, and these things get watered down. And,
yeah, you got to rank him too somewhere, right? You got to rank him someplace.
Yeah, you got to rank him. So what I'm saying is, Sonny Edwards coming, you know, with one really good performance like that, he puts himself near the top of the division, which is to his credit, and you know that's taking advantage of an opportunity. But that's what happened there, just with some of those divisions down there, with, you know, being thinned out because there's a division every couple of pounds.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And Bivol, I mean, he had been off since October 2019. Had a nice stretch run of Barrera, Chalamba, Pascal, Joe Smith Jr., but then has really fallen off just in general. He was seemed like he was going to be with Top Rank, then DAZN, then he's stuck in neutral, but he does have a lot of skill. I did see kind of the back half of it, so you're right. I saw, you know, Richards closed pretty well. And just to kind of clean up some of the stuff with Taylor, I had it 6-4 with Taylor. I thought she won three out of the first four. She was just – at times she was getting countered, but she was landing the better shots. There was some head clashes early. Third round was close. I thought the fifth and the sixth, though, and even the seventh, that's where Jonas really started to close better in the rounds, kind of, you know, land to the head and body, and like I said, countering as well. She started to do that, and then I thought Taylor kind of pushed her off a little bit, where she'd kind of be on the move and then combo and then go back out, but really active. I thought she looked like, not that she's in bad shape ever. I mean, I've seen her gas a little bit, but her body actually looked even like more toned, let's put it that way. But some competitive rounds in there, no doubt, but I did like what I saw out of Taylor, Katie Taylor, that is. We'll see, like you said. You know, I didn't know she was mid-30s. For some reason, I thought she was 30. But, yeah, that's pretty crazy, you know, to be – it's like, wow, you better get going. But she's had a good career so far, no doubt about it. Or great, I should say. All right. So, Canelo Alvarez, Billy Joe Saunders. What says you, sir, about the chances of Billy Joe Saunders' style representing some sort of difficulty level, at least for a chunk of the fight, with Canelo, who, you know, I mean, you got to take out the Mayweather fight. Not that it doesn't count, or, you know, the prime for prime, I'd knock him out, all that dumb stuff. I'm just saying, like, I don't like to say anybody really towards Floyd when we're talking about outside fighters or just crafty fighters or whatever, defensive fighters. But I'm more like to talk about a Lara and an Austin Trout in this scenario. Sure, Jacobs was kind of subtly moving, circling lightly on the outside. And of course, the second fight with Golovkin was jabbing from the outside. But we wouldn't really confuse both those with some high-level or even top-level, world-level outside guys. Now, at 168, Billy Joe Saunders hasn't really done much. It's all about where his mental and his physical shape is with him. He doesn't have a good win at 168. Murray's way past it. But looking at that Murray fight, body-wise, hand speed-wise, crisp punch-wise, movement, I actually thought he looked pretty good. And I think we're going to get a focused Billy Joe Saunders here. Is that enough to say go 8-4 or something like that? How do you see this one playing out?
I think it's come down to this for me, Chris, is even though David Lemieux's more of a limited guy than some people probably acknowledge. I mean, you know, Lemieux, he lost to Alcine, and Marco Antonio Rubio stopped him. I mean, why did you say that? Even though those are fights a long ways back now. And, you know, fighters can get better, like we talked about, improve. But still, I think with Lemieux, to me, he's always been the same guy. I mean, you know, he's got some decent hand speed and power, but you know, he just winds up and throws. But what I'm alluding to is, you know, Billy Joe Saunders came over to North America. That was a legit even money fight on the odds. And even though it was even money, I think most people at that point thought Lemieux was going to win. And, you know, Saunders just boxed his ears off, made him look silly, legitimately. But here's the thing then where I have problems with Billy Joe Saunders, even though I think that's his career best performance. We can all say that safely, even though he's got some other decent scalps out there, you know, and he beat Andy Lee in a fight. He dropped him twice in one round, but he was so cautious then down the stretch. I actually thought Lee did enough to win it very closely. Saunders got the decision. And, you know, he's got a split decision or split a majority, I'm trying to remember, against Chris Eubank Jr., who's got his own limitations. But getting back to the Lemieux fight, Saunders' career best performance looked really good, made Lemieux look stupid. We saw all the talent he had there, but even in a performance like that, you still saw the flaw like I saw in the Lee fight. And frankly, I put this on his corner as well. If you listen to the corner instructions he was getting down the stretch against Lemieux, even though he won that fight in a shutout, it was, you know, stay away from him, be careful, you know, just, you know, keep your distance, no need to pick up the pace. These were like literally the type of instructions he was getting down the stretch. And why I say that is, Lemieux was basically about a guy out on his feet down the stretch in that fight. Saunders with his talent level, you know, and again, he's got pop in that straight left. He just fights in a very cautious manner. He could have gotten him out of there in any of those later rounds and didn't come close to stepping on the gas. You talked about the Murray fight, another good example. You know, Murray, totally overmatched, 37. You know, Saunders, I mean, he could have picked it up any times in those later rounds and stopped him. And you know, I just think at a point that's kind of a flaw. I mean, it is pro boxing, you know. And I guess what I'm saying is where it hurts him is, even though Canelo has got, with Golovkin, they're 1A and 1B, whichever order to me you want to put him in, I don't think it automatically goes to Golovkin either. I think he could just as easily say Canelo. They got the best chins in boxing. So I understand that, but I'm saying Saunders hits a little harder with that left hand than you think. I'm not saying he's going to hurt Canelo, but I'm just saying you're kind of at a disadvantage where this is a guy who, even if he hurt Canelo with a straight left hand, he's not going to do anything to try to finish him. I mean, it has to be a one-punch knockout, which that is not going to happen. So he, you know, it's got to be a decision for him. So I take it this way is, if the Billy Joe Saunders who was there for Lemieux shows up Saturday night, he's capable of stinking out the joint and go in 12 with Canelo, where Canelo doesn't put much leather on him. And Canelo probably wins the fight legitimately on aggression, but a lot of people scream that Saunders, you know, should have gotten the decision. Now, that's his best-case scenario, I think. His worst-case scenario is, I think, what you talked about, is the problem, he hasn't looked that good since the Lemieux fight, whether it's fighting at 168 pounds, not taking things seriously enough, maybe Lemieux being so limited as a slugger, all of the above combined, he just hasn't looked any good. So if that Saunders shows up, I don't think Canelo stops him. I've seen people saying that. I mean, even the odds makers, you know, you look at the odds, you know, they seem to be leaning more towards the Canelo stoppage, but I still, even with that lesser Saunders, I don't see that. I think the guy's got enough talent and skill. He can, even the lesser Saunders can stink it out and go 12. So I'm looking at either a boring, tight Canelo decision where, you know, not many punches are landed, or if the lesser Saunders shows up, I think just, you know, Canelo basically just shutting them out on aggression and Saunders just stinking it out and able to go the distance. But either way, I think Canelo wins it. But I do think it goes the distance.
And both those fights we talked about early in his career with Eubank Jr. and Annie Lee, he, like, by the sixth round and on, he faded. He, you know, he gets off to good starts, and obviously he's going to have to get off to a good start in this one. But, you know, the guy does, like, talk about fighting to levels. I mean, it's so rare for a guy to look that bad against just mediocre to barely world level talent at times, or and getting hurt and everything, where you're like, dude, you might lose this fight, you know? And so that's why it's such a, I mean, obviously that catches up with you. And like I said, especially at this weight class, it's not like he's a big puncher at 160 anyway. And yeah, when you haven't matched skill for skill in so long, and even I'm glad you brought that up about Lemieux, big puncher, sure, but he's very limited. Even how he won his belt was a brawl against a guy that knocked down a bunch, but still, it was a tough fight for him. And then Golovkin just jabbed his face off, basically. I still think for the first six rounds, he may be able to put some in the bank. It may not look like that on the scorecard, but I think that he's going to come out and do just some good pivoting, you know, circling on the move type thing. I, for some reason, I think he's going to get up for those first four rounds or whatever. And that's not really saying a whole lot, but yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Hopefully we get a competitive fight. We're always thinking that, but any other items that you want to discuss here, sir?
Yeah, well, just a couple, Chris. Try to make it brief as we wrap it up here. But since I think I'll start with Canelo first, since we were just talking about him. And these kind of tie together for me. You know, Canelo came out, you know, he was on the Brian Custer podcast, and he's speaking English. He always figured he could, but there he is doing it and doing it well. I've seen a lot of his Mexican fans, you know, say they just appreciate that, you know, he does everything in Spanish because of the heritage, and I can respect that, and nobody's trying to take him away from Mexico or, you know, his Mexican heritage. Obviously, that's a big part of things, but I just think this is real interesting, you know, from a marketing perspective, since, like you've said, I mean, there's really no argument. He's a U.S.-based fighter. And, you know, he spends a lot of living time, I guess, in San Diego. But there's Canelo out there. There's Canelo out there. I watched, you know, it was on video as well. And it was just interesting. I mean, there's Canelo out there speaking English, doing it well. And in terms of marketing, this is like a whole new phase. I mean, that could be starting for Canelo. I think as people see that and he does it more, you didn't hear that much talk about it today, but I think you will. You know, people might want to just check that out of curiosity. You figured he could do it, but he's doing it. So you heard his thoughts in English. You know, he's out there straight out giving an interview with Custer in English. And I figure that's not going to be the first time we see it. And it ties into my second point, which I was thinking this, tweeted a little bit about it over the weekend, but thinking about it more, and I'll be the first to say, I think Canelo looks legitimately happy working with Eddie Hearn, but he's on a fight-by-fight deal now with what he wants to do. And as some fans who were looking at the other side of the coin pointed out, yeah, true, we would have to pay for it, where if you have the zone, you're not paying for it. But with that understood, here's what I'm thinking now, and this is with the added thing today of Canelo speaking English in interviews, is can you imagine if you took basically the same pay-per-view we just had on May 1st here that Ruiz and Areola headlined, and Pendants Day weekend in September, and plunk Canelo Plant on top of it? I mean, can you picture with Canelo marketing it in Spanish and English? Can you picture how potentially big that could be in September with a Fox promo?
I was going to say, the NFL will be back by that time. They're already being their games, so they could, in August and September, they could do it. And, you know, you can always tell he understands English just fine because he always, when they ask him a question, for the most part, he answers, but obviously in Spanish. But we've kind of known that he actually does, but the word was always that he's a little embarrassed because he doesn't like the way he sounds saying it. So he's always been kind of shy, but that's a good point. That is a really good point. And it's easier to get people like on a whole, not just you and I, but on a whole, it's easier to get people to pitch in for a bigger name too, for pay-per-view as well. So it's easier to be like, hey, Canelo's fighting. Oh, I've heard of Canelo, to your casual fight fans. But yeah, that's a great call. That would be that'd be really, really interesting. And that does add a different level, no doubt about it, period. I mean, just to have that Fox promo with Canelo would be great. I definitely want to see it.
Yeah, Plant has gotten enough exposure, and he's drawn enough ratings at times on his own. You know, he's not like the prototypical B-side. I mean, he's going to, again, with Fox NFL promo and PBC promo during the late summer and fall, he's going to bring in additional views. I mean, that's got a lot of potential. I mean, that's really got a lot of potential. Canelo wins Saturday.
And he talks with a lot of confidence too. He's not out there just loose-lipped all the time talking trash. But if Plant will answer if someone's talking trash to him.
Yeah, he knows how to. He's a guy that's perfectly capable of promoting a fight. So that's got tremendous potential. We'll see what happens. But I think that's some of the subjects will probably be too long to get into tonight, but just want to say on one positive, look at the negatives, got to look at the positives. I think actually it's coincidental, but, you know, you and I talked a little bit about it last week, in the last week or so. I think it's worth mentioning that, you know, we had another good day and night like that Saturday with all the fights we went over.
Right.
It's been kind of coincidental, but between PBC, Matchroom, and Top Rank, going day and night, you know, the UK stuff coming in on Saturday during the day, then Top Rank or PBC coming in, you know, starting in the early evenings with their undercards, going straight through the rest of the night. There's been some really good day nights of boxing the last few weeks over the last few weeks.
And even in March, too. We talked about that in March, too.
Yeah, I mean, if it's for boxing, if that can continue – because, you know, you feel like you're kind of getting your day's worth of boxing in where you're not getting ripped off. Maybe it's just because of the volume of fights you're getting enough good ones. But, you know, there's been enough good in there that that's been kind of good for boxing. You haven't felt, you know, tortured like we talked about, you know, watching some of these undercard fights or getting through the day and night. So, you know, if maybe they just get it, like what I'd like to see is, I think now you've got the hardcore U.S. fan picking up these U.K. cards on DAZN or ESPN Plus in the afternoons on Saturdays. Why don't we get maybe creative and you know, in those afternoon slots on those cards, even if maybe it's a U.K. guy against an American guy or maybe just even two Americans stuck in there, let's start using those slots where we appeal to that American audience watching in the afternoon, you know, within those U.K. cards, not taking away from the thunder of it being a UK featured event, but sticking some of that in there just so maybe you can even get a few casual fans, you know, put precisely what time those fights are going to go on, because I think you might be on to something here where, you know, you've got these ESPN Plus or these DAZN cards in the afternoon that, you know, maybe could be marketed even a little more to U.S. fans.
Yeah, that's a good, that's, you know, even if it is just sometimes, you know what I mean? That, because obviously, you know, like you mentioned, it's not going to line up perfectly, but yeah, that could be interesting. That could definitely be interesting, no doubt about it. Well, I appreciate you taking time out once again, John. You have yourself a good night, man.
Thanks for having me, Chris. Been great as always, and look forward to talking boxing with you again soon. Have a good night.
Yep, take it easy. Enjoy the fight. And I say enjoy the fight because there really isn't – I mean, hopefully something pops off on the undercard, but it is just a fight. You know what I mean? There's not a whole lot on the undercard, but some prospect names. The co-feature might turn out to be pretty good. 310, Mark, my switchboard's a little messed up. I'm refreshing it, or I did refresh it. I see some numbers on here that I let's see here. Let's see if this works here. Oh, there we go. 310, what's going on, man? How you doing?
Hey.
What's up?
What's up, Chris? How's it going, man? How's it going? Ah, man.
It's going pretty good, man. Going pretty good. How about you?
Can you believe it's been fucking... You've been gone this long in this weird other dimension that isn't reality.
Yeah, I'm kidding.
Like,
seriously,
it's still
dude.
Fucking going on, man. I mean,
it is another dimension.
It's like the most normal place here. You know, it's been crazy because, you know, obviously spring break, so everyone, you know, was coming here last month and the month before.
Yeah.
Because it's the most normal place, especially Fort Lauderdale. But, you know, it's like... It's still not the same. I mean, it's like, you know, get in my elevator and this chick's like, you know, I forgot my fucking, my mask. Like, you know, it's an upscale, like, sort of building, but everyone's so bougie. And she's like, you know, she wouldn't get on the elevator. I was in the elevator. She wouldn't get in. I'm like, yeah, I know I'm an asshole, but I do live fucking three doors up. Like, you know what I mean? I'm just going to my mailbox. I'm sorry. Sorry.
And you
like,
could be
no.
6 feet away in an elevator.
And I'm like,
you know what I mean?
And I literally said, I was like, you're the one with the mask on.
Like, right. We're
you know,
good.
Like, really. Aren't you the one being protected? Shit. Like, fuck. But it's whatever. It's really, really weird. It's not against it, not for it. It's just weird. You know what I mean? It's
like
weird,
you said,
you know?
Another dimension. Another dimension. That's exactly what it is.
Anything's possible, man. Anything is possible. It kind of sucks. I haven't been able to – well, I've been able to call in, but there really hasn't been anything to be like, to call in about. I love it when John calls in, especially that fucking – that show that you guys did a week or two ago when you guys, like, went through the divisions and, like
– Oh, yeah.
Man.
Talent?
Yeah, man. Yeah. You guys should do that more often because it's like, especially for people like me that like, you know, you just put me up on game with a few guys that, you know, it's like, okay, let me keep an eye on this guy. Like, you know what I mean? So I don't have to fucking waste time and, you know, have to weed through fights and sit through the bullshit. So,
right.
Yeah. But yeah.
We'll have to revisit that.
Ruiz.
Yeah, for sure.
Every once in a while, just because it's hard to keep track, man. It's hard to keep track of what's going on. Look at what's going on with the YouTube pages, man. Like, I haven't been subscribed to fucking Fight Hype or Fight Hub or any of that shit for who God knows how long. I don't know how anybody with half of a brain could, because it's like, why would you want to fucking poison your fucking intelligence with this shit, with Ben just fucking trying to get paid off fucking these two-minute videos that have absolutely nothing to do with fucking boxing? He's just getting paid, ready, you know, just taking offers on his fucking, oh, you want to buy Fight Hype fucking YouTube page for $500,000? No, okay. How about $1.5 million? Like, you know, he doesn't give a shit. So, you know, it's tough to keep track. So I appreciate you guys doing that.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You're right. In a lot of the bigger names, there was a lot of talk about fights. Oh, Tank and, you know, Gervonta and Garcia, and there's all sorts of talk. But, yeah, it's like now we need those to get made. So it is, you could tell there's like this lull that people are like, all right, dude, let's make these fights now. you know. So I totally get it.
They don't have to market it to us, man. Like UFC fans and shit like that. I talk to, you know, people that I, you know, will politic with every now and then. They all watch fucking UFC. Like, you know, like, and so, like, they uh-huh. know how to fuck. They know who Errol Spence is. They know how to fuck. You don't have to
right.
market these guys. You don't have to fucking put them out there. If they want it, if they like the guy, if they see something they like, they fucking go, and you just got to give them real shit. It's got to be real.
True.
You can't be pulling these fucking scams like what they're trying to do right now with Andy Ruiz and fucking Luis Ortiz. Come on. Come on.
Anyone you think that's a bad fight?
That's going to be fake. No, it would be a great fight if it was fucking real, but it's going to be fake. I mean, like I said, and it's going to be a good lead-in for the Canelo prediction that I'm going to give because, again, I said this for the past 5 years. Guys, please pay attention. Fake fights don't count. How fucking difficult is that to fucking understand? They don't count. So, like... What I mean by that is this fucking dude. What happens if Luis Ortiz wins? What the fuck? I mean, what was he gonna put it like? Come on, they already know what.
Yeah, you're not gonna do a trilogy with Wilder.
He's gonna take a
true.
Fucking dive and look at it. Look at his last fight. And remember, I was the only one saying that his two fights against Wilder, he did a great job. Man, you got to give him credit for how great he. I mean, if I was him, I mean, like if he. He took a dive. He took both those dives better than – I appreciate those dives because it's fucking like – like he actually took the punch. It's like you know, like I was sitting there like, oh, shit, Wilder's fucking – damn, like that fucking blinding him with a jab. Like, holy shit. And then, like, they asked Wilder after the fight afterwards. He didn't even know what the fuck he even did. So, I mean, it's like those two fights were fake. He got tested positive for fucking – for testosterone. Then they still give him the shot, even though nobody wanted to sign him. He couldn't get any fights. This was very obvious, you know, a few years back. Then all of a sudden, when he gets the Wilder
pills.
Fight.
They forgot the form.
Yeah,
they forgot
yeah.
to check it off.
It's like, holy shit. He gets a freebie fight a few months ago, whenever it was. And come on, everyone listen to this
yeah,
shit.
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah.
Are we going
to
really
they're
fucking
clearly trying
that
to set up
real?
A Luis Ortiz fight.
That was a fucking straight dive. The fucking dude walked in. I didn't even watch it. But I knew. I was like, yeah, why is he even getting a fight right now? Because he made that deal before he fucking – that's how he got the Wilder fight to begin with. Do you want to take this – do you want to test positive on these steroids or do you want to get this money? Who gives a shit if you win or lose? It's about getting paid. He looked at his kids. He looked at his family, his house. Fuck that. I want to get my money. I mean, it's like, so that's what it is. So that's, you know, he's there to, so that they could try to bring back. The perfect narrative would be to have Ruiz win that fight against Ortiz, look good. This way they could put him against Wilder, and then Wilder knocks him out. Shit, Wilder's right back on the mat. Shit, we got
right.
American boxing fans fucking that. I mean, this isn't rocket science, guys. What other heavyweight is there out there to make money off the American public, off the American fans?
I mean,
there are none.
That
that's
is
the reason. That's the reason why
I mean,
we have
Ruiz,
to watch this
Ruiz
dude
possibly.
That doesn't even know how to throw a punch. He throws a punch like me. I'm a fucking mitts. Come on, dude. Like, what the fuck
Ruiz
is going
has,
on here in the world?
Ruiz does have potential to sell, though. But, you know,
he
we've
does.
Had
yeah,
our
yeah.
agreements.
Again.
We've had our disagreements, but... I don't think the Luis
is a good fighter.
Knockout like that. Oh yeah, definitely. But that knockout, the first knockout with that uppercut, how hurt he was. I don't
real
think
knockouts.
That. I don't think that was fake.
No.
And then this last
just
one,
like how
like
Kovalev.
Said, though,
I mean, Canelo really knocked
right.
out Kovalev. I'm not saying that it was
right.
fake.
You're
I
saying
mean, like, but
he didn't go out like a. Give me something to the body and I'm out. You know, it wasn't like that.
Yeah,
they,
like
they
were taking my advice. They were paying. They finally were paying attention to 310. I said years ago, yeah, if you guys are going to do this shit, make it look real. At least make it look real. You're a boxer. You can take a fucking punch. So do it. If someone's going to pay me fucking $10 million, I mean, the limit goes pretty fucking far. You know what I mean? Like, okay, so I got to, especially
I mean,
if I did it for a living. I did it for a living. okay? Get punched in the face for a living. Okay, it's not that far-fetched, guys. And we all know what the truth is deep down. So, yeah, I mean, it's that would be great for Wilder. That's the only thing that would bring him back. You know, change up your fucking – yeah, man, because if he's got a new trainer now. And then, oh, shit, like, goes against Ruiz. And then, oh, shit, he knocked out Ruiz. If he knocked out Ruiz 2 months from now, it would – every all that bullshit would be ancient
history. And Joshua
couldn't
knock him out. Joshua couldn't knock him out even when he was fat. You know, yeah.
Exactly.
No,
right back to the script.
They are
right back to the script.
That. They are angling. No matter if there's –
Season four.
I mean, we got to stretch these episodes out, dude. We got to stretch this episode out. But
hey, we got these
even
guys.
If,
we got these guys signed on for it. Fucking 12 more episodes. We got to make this shit happen.
I mean, they are definitely trying to go that way with Ruiz and Wilder, and that will create.
And
hype.
He will lose, and you know he would lose against Wilder. And in my opinion, I mean that's a good fight against him and Wilder because it's two contrasting styles. But
yeah,
to be honest with you, I think that Errol Spence could beat Wilder. I'm not even going to flip in line. I think most of these welterweights out there can beat him. I think that Charlo could beat him. I think that these guys can beat him. It's like, you know, I'm not going to bullshit about it anymore. The guy, it's a complete, like, I say this not to fucking, I'm trying to help people make them, like, you know, just watch it. Trust your eyes. Trust your mind. It's bullshit. Like, you know, it's bullshit. It's not bias. It's yeah. So that.
So what do we
that's
think?
What that
what's,
plan
what's
is.
The BS that's going to happen here in Canelo Saunders? Then let's play this out.
I don't think there's any BS, man. I think it's exciting. It's exciting. It's I think it's the I think people are. I mean, I don't know how excited people are about it, but they should be really, really excited about it. No bullshit, because this is the hardest fight that Canelo's had since Lara. You know, the thing is, like, what happens with people, I think, is, like, they like to believe in bullshit. You know, like, it's like what Roger Mayweather said. It's, like, really, really, it's true. I mean, like, if you do the math and you look at it, who did he fight after Lara, right? I forgot. He was like fought Kirkland. He fought Angulo, but Angulo was out of shape. But he would have beat him anyway. But Angulo didn't look his best. He fought like Amir Khan, and then like the Cotto fight. You know, the size.
The Chavez Jr.
Very. Yeah, that doesn't count. And then like, you know, like so he, you know, Liam Smith. Yeah, like so you have those fights. You got Amir Khan. You got Cotto, which, yeah, you know, that's a real fight, but the size difference was just me. It was like, it was crazy. And, but yeah, you know, you got to give him credit for the fucking win. But, okay, so you had Cotto, you had Kirkland. Kirkland doesn't count. Khan doesn't count. Liam Smith doesn't count. Those are like.
Rocky Fielding
man,
doesn't count.
If they were fake, doesn't count.
Rocky Fielding
yeah, no,
definitely
that,
doesn't count.
Yeah, that doesn't count. And then you had Chavez Jr., then you had Triple G twice. So this. People like to believe in bullshit because I was, you know, me and you were talking 5-6 years ago, like, and I was, like, the only person in the fucking world that was saying all this shit about Golovkin. I was like, this is bullshit. This is the power is fake. It's all nonsense. It's just because HBO fucking, they had, is what they were working with, limited budget, whatever the case may be, so they hyped them
right.
up. They used their power, and it was really, really good. The reason why that's relevant is because that's what built up this whole persona. Triple G was never shit, guys. I'm sorry. He was never shit ever fucking to begin with. I said from the start, he's a B-level fighter. He always was. That's why I got the fucking Heyman Jacobs prediction on point, because I said they're both B-level fighters. They're not shit, really. They're not special. So it's going to be fucking neck and neck. We don't know who the fuck
that was neck.
That's what I said.
No, yeah, you called
yeah.
it. You definitely called it.
And so it's like, and how crazy did it sound to everybody when I was saying the power was bullshit? I mean, this shit doesn't come from thin air, guys. I mean, I just use my brain and I trust it. Like, you know, I look at it and I'm like, that's not real. It looks fake. The guy's fucking. Not really
and now he's
out.
Just old. So all the stuff they talked about him, now he's just old, right? So it doesn't count. Even
yeah.
though it goes right
so,
into
him taking on challenges and looking normal instead of what they were saying in Marvin Hagler and B-Hop.
If you believe that, then you're going to be on the whole thing like, oh, Canelo's chin. Oh, my God. He's fucking amazing. He improved so much. No, we really don't know that. We really don't know that at all. We don't know how much he's fucking improved. He's fucking 5 feet.
Especially at cutting off the ring. You know?
Especially at cutting off the ring.
Who has he cut off?
And if you even see, like, he has good upper body movement, but you saw, like, that didn't really come on that much until the Jacobs fight. And that doesn't really count against Jacobs because Jacobs was there to lose. He's almost always there to lose in a big fucking fight. He got a look on his face like he's scared all the time. Like, it is not even – I don't know. He never looks like he wanted to win, especially in that fight. But I think Canelo would have beat him anyway. But he showed body – he showed his upper body movement there. But is it fluid? Is it, like, normal? Is it, like – he's getting better at it, but it's not, like I don't think it's anything like people see that, they see the bullshit, he's not really that good at coming forward. I really don't think that he is, and this is the wrong guy
with. I think he has improved as a fighter clearly, but the book is still out on cutting off the ring against a high level guy on the outside.
But I agree with you there. But how about the fact that he thinks? Here's the thing. This fight wasn't happening. This fight should have happened two years ago or a year ago, whenever. But the people at Golden Boy, people who are actually fucking paying attention, matchmakers and shit, they knew what the fuck kind of threat that Billy Joe would actually pose to Canelo. I would. You know, I'd be like, no. We're going to want to try to force Billy Joe to fight Andre. You know, like, have them fucking, like, have the good guys duke it out because we don't want to risk that. And, like, that's why it's funny now how, you know, he goes on his own, and this guy, his head is so big, and why wouldn't it be? I mean, it's like he's sitting there and he's saying all this shit. He's going as far as to say that he would knock out Floyd in his prime. You got his fucking trainer sitting there fucking being like, oh, yeah, no, we're going to knock out Billy Joe. He's breathing his own exhaust time. That's a bad, bad move. This isn't a guy that's just 30-0 and from UK, you got to actually pay attention to how he fights and why he looks bad in fights. A lot of people talk shit about him because that fight, two fights ago,
He's had a couple of Cobeiros fights. Yeah, something like that. But
yeah.
He's had a couple of these fights where he looks horrible.
Yeah, but how about the first six rounds? First six rounds, he's on point. Clean as fuck, and then all of a sudden, because he doesn't give a shit, like he's fucking because he's Billy Joe Saunders, you could tell he doesn't fucking care. He's walking in there, and then seventh round, he fucking slows down, and even that Costaneros guy. Anyone listen to this shit? I'm not bullshitting. Watch the first six, seven rounds. He's on point, and then he's just like fuck. He was just trying to get him out of there. He's holding. Why does he hold so much in round 7, 8, 9, 10, 11? He always loses the second half of the fight. Why? He's not getting hit like that. He's like, why would he look that good in the first six rounds? Like,
right.
He's the luckiest guy on the planet every fucking first six rounds? No, it's because he has no discipline. He's probably a bit of a scumbag.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, he's like, you know, and it's like, that might be a factor, but, like, when you look at the odds, I mean, fuck, man. I looked at it a couple of days ago, and I was like, dude, plus 500 he was. He was plus 500. I got it right. This was the date of these odds were – and this will be worth it. It's fucking, like, there's a – it's pretty crazy. On Intertop, they had fucking Billy Joe plus 500 – and fucking Canelo minus 800. Like, what the fuck? Are you kidding me? Like, that's crazy. So, like, you got to look at the shady stuff, too. If I own the casino, if I was a mafioso dude, would I ever want to pay out that plus 500 to all those UK fans that are fucking, you know, trying to put that money down on Billy Joe. No, even if I was best friends with Billy Joe, I'd rob him. Like, you know, like, I'm not going to let that happen. I'd probably let him in on the action. So, I mean, it's like, I don't – that's the problem is, like, he's plus 500. It really all depends on how many people are putting money down on that. It seems like he's – going back to, like, what I was saying before, like, okay, so he doesn't give a shit about regular guys. Like what John was saying, like, yeah, he looked great in the Lemieux fight. What was that Lemieux fight? That was the one fight that it was, like, all eyes on him. Who's Billy Joe Saunders? Like, it was, like, his coming out fight, was it not? Like,
it definitely
a
was.
Lot of people – And he fucking showed up for it. So what makes people think that he's not going to show up for this? And we know that his conditioning problems are really all his own. So, I mean, it's really on him, because if you look at it, like if you really, really look at it, I mean, it's like, I'm just being honest. I'm not hating on Canelo. I you know, I've predicted most of his fights.
You've been
always
pro Canelo for quite some time, if we're being fair, you know.
When I saw him fight Floyd and I saw his movement, the subtle movements, what Floyd had to do, Floyd had to, like, you know, like, trick him with his distance. He would step in and step out. Like, he had to do, like, very subtle things. That's the reason why it looked like a sort of, like, a whitewashed fight, but it wasn't. Like, you know, like
right.
Canelo was right there. He was just, like, he was trying to be like Floyd, but he just doesn't do it naturally. It's like Billy Joe Saunders, he's like – really, at the end of the day, he's really got the same exact skill as Canelo, except he's got faster hands, not faster, quicker hands, and he has obviously the best combinations in the division. I see, yeah, he has better combinations than Caleb Plant. I think Caleb Plant beats him, but he's got the best combination punches in the game. You see, he'll land 3-4 punches. You didn't even see he landed them, and then he's in and out. He also has the quickest feet in the division. The quickest feet. Look at him in the first 6 rounds. It's not like you're not born with stamina and born without it. I mean, he's either training for a fight or he's not. So if he's ready for all 6 rounds, he could, like, literally this would be one of those things where he would win 8, 9, 10 rounds. And then everyone's claiming that fucking, you know, Canelo sort of won 6. But, you know, and then they got to do a rematch or whatever. They, you know, they fuck him over like Lara. This is going to be like the Lara fight. I think, you know, it's going to be like the Lara fight. I mean, you can't sit there like Teddy Atlas thinking that, you know, oh, Canelo's all great and all this shit. No, I don't. Like I said before, fake fights do not count. They don't count. He didn't knock out Kovalev. Guys, he didn't. He didn't. That was fake. It was fake. It wasn't real. It's like a movie. It doesn't count. I said it before the fight. I said people are going to think that he's the greatest fighter ever, okay? And trust me, it doesn't mean shit, because he's going to be the same fighter before the fight and after the fight, because it's not real, okay? It was Rocky Fielding real? No. Has Canelo fought one real fight at 167? No, he has not. He hasn't. You put him in there with Benavidez, he might get stopped for all we know. He might get stopped. Okay, another important thing to note, the only real person who actually, like, gave, well, the two people that really gave Billy Joe Saunders, like, some sort of problems were both really tall. Remember that Andy Lee fight? He was like,
yeah,
Billy Joe, he has problems with, you got to be tall, you got to be rangy, and you got to be active, and he's got to be out of shape. You got to catch him slipping, and you got to be – that's like the opposite of, like, what Canelo is. Right now, Canelo thinks that he is fucking, like, you know, he thinks he's, like, a fucking porn star. He thinks he's fucking – he thinks he's, like, on top of the fucking world.
He's
like,
boogie
you know, fuck this. Like, you know, I'm on my own. Like, fuck that. I mean, what'd you say?
So he thinks he's in Boogie Nights?
The porn star? Yeah, he thinks he's Dirk Diggler. Yeah, yeah, he does. He's fucking, and he does. I mean, he literally said that he would knock out Floyd in his prime. This is a person who's breathing his own exhaust. This is a little bit different. Okay, there's no denying the fact that he has quicker feet than Canelo. Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if he doesn't have as quick as feet as Lara. It doesn't matter. It's quicker than Canelo's, And honestly, it's going to look like one of those things where it's like, can it, it's going to be an activity thing. I think, you know, Canelo is so used to coming forward that it's going to make him overconfident. And he's going to get schooled for the first 6-7 rounds. And then we're going to see the real fight after that. We'll see what kind of shape that Billy Joe is in. People are going to realize, they're going to actually notice what I've been saying about his combinations for the longest time. He's a very, very talented dude. I don't give a shit, like, the types of dudes that he was fighting. When you look at the shit that he's landing, it's 3, 4, 5 punches in, like, a half a second. And he's, like, on his toes and moving in and out. It's very, very talented. The thing is this. What does he have, working against him? He's got less power than Canelo, I think.
Especially at 68.
Yeah, he's less disciplined. Well, we don't really know that about Canelo, remember? Because Canelo had never had a real fight at 68. He never did. He never, even this isn't a real fucking fight, really, to be on at 68. It really isn't. Okay, we'll
because,
see how he feels
BJ
with the
hasn't done much at 68.
Well, Canelo? Yeah. Well, Canelo.
No, I'm saying.
What's one
that's
real
why you're
fight?
That's not a
had...
real fight because Saunders hasn't done shit at 168.
Yeah. Yeah, Saunders is a real 160 pounder. Right? Really, that's what it is. I mean, like,
yeah.
It's, I mean, that's, I just, yeah, it's, I mean, he, okay, so he's got less power. He's usually less conditioned than Canelo, but again, that's a twin thing. So he's less disciplined than Canelo. And then you got, like, I don't know, you got the scumbag factor. So this is, I mean, that's the main thing. And, like, I say this out of respect to Billy Joe Saunders because I actually think he's a funny guy. He's cool, but. He doesn't give
yeah,
a he's just like a regular guy just having fun. So
right.
That's his main thing. If he cares about the fight, then okay. But he's also the type of dude, if you came to him with some cash underneath the table, he'll do whatever the fuck you want. So, or, you know, if this is it for him, like how Chavez Jr., like his goal was to get a Canelo fight. So when he got in there, he was like, okay, I already won I won my side of the fight. Now the fight is actually going on, but I don't give a shit because I got my money. Like, you know, like he could come from that approach, but I don't think so. You know, I think he wants more than that. And it's, I've never seen an interview on him. I heard him talk a couple times, but you can just tell he's, I don't know. It's, people are going to be surprised. It's all about the second half of the fight. What can Canelo do? Can Canelo, we know Canelo's going to get a couple of those early rounds just by robbery alone. Is he going to be able to get at least four or five of the last six? I'm being dead serious, people. Like, that's, he's going to, I mean, the first half of the fight, you will see. Like, it's a difference.
I think the first four or six rounds could be problems too,
yeah.
Stylistically.
Yeah.
How do you think, let's take away the judging, but as far as your scorecard at home writing it down, what do you think the scorecard will be? Like, your scorecard, not what they're going to say in Texas.
8-4, 7-5-ish, might even be 9-3. And that's what I have.
For
like,
Billy.
The Lara fight? Yeah, for Billy Joe. But I do think that everyone's going to agree. Like, people are going to be like, oh, shit, Billy Joe Saunders. Oh, my God. Then all of a sudden they're going to think that he's fucking all great and shit all of a sudden. Yeah, but, like, you know,
he'll be a king in the UK, He'll be another
Gypsy
King, dude.
and hey, man, they're fine. I mean, I've met a lot of Gypsies, like, in the past with business and stuff. I've never met one of them that wasn't smart as hell. I've met a lot of them couldn't even read and write and stuff. But they were just so smart, so on point. Like, so I mean, he's not a dumb guy, and you could tell how he boxes. It's not
that's true.
I never saw him get hit flush. I mean, you said you saw him get hurt. I saw him fatigued. He does get hit a little bit more.
Maybe that's a combo. I mean, he got hit fatigued and then get clean, you know, that is a combo that I didn't detail. That is a good point, but, you know, and he's not going to be like that.
Sometimes he moves into the punches too sometimes. You notice that too, right? Because he's not like,
body-wise, he
looked
good in the Martin Murray fight, though, body-wise.
Yeah.
He looked sharp,
yeah.
He looked quick, and that's what clearly he's in good shape this time. And I think it's not just for this camp. I think he's been in shape now for probably the last 9 months or something like that, 12 months. So that's going to – at least he's putting his best foot forward now, but it would have to be 9-3 to get the victory, at least 8-4 to get the victory. It's probably still a draw that point.
What do you – what about – I mean, do you really think that, though? Because, you know, this has been following Canelo ever since the Mayweather fight. It's been, like, going on for almost a decade now. Don't you think the judges at this point would be like, eh – maybe we should just, like, what the fuck? Like, that might start working against them.
Maybe if it was
almost
in New York or the U.K., but we're in Texas, baby. That's going to – they want to say, hey, come back. Come back, man. Let's fill this stadium. You and Spence in 3 years could be a great fight. Charlo, Benavidez, we could fill this stadium or go to the MGM. So, no, I don't think they're ready to give up on old Canelo.
So that's a big, big money. He has lost already, though. And, you know, I don't think his appeal is him being
fucking –
He gets hit, and he's had so many close fights. He's had a lot of close fights. Come on. The Trout fight was close as fuck.
Has.
You lost the Lara fight.
Lara fight was close.
That it was a draw, like, whatever. Like, you know, the Jacobs fight was pretty close. The Golovkin fights were close. It's not like he's fucking – like, he's not – but apparently he would knock out fucking Floyd. Like, you know, so he's hopefully that's just an act. Guys, but it's like this guy is he's thinking he's on some shit that's like, you know, it's clearly not true. It's on some delusional shit. Maybe that's the reason why he took this fight. Maybe he's actually believing that all these fights above 160 were actually real. Maybe he actually believes that shit. So maybe he actually really thinks that he could beat guys at 175. Goes in there with Caleb Plant, he probably might even get stopped. Well, not stopped, but the size difference will be like, what the fuck? He looked like he shouldn't even be in the fucking ring with fucking Callum Smith. He's so fucking small. Yeah, these guys.
Yeah, Benavidez
will be big. From his activity, that would be
in
a good
jab.
Fight. Him against Benavidez is a good fight. But even still, he's too small. He's fucking 5'8", dude. He's that small as fuck. Watch what Joe fucking does.
He might be 5'7".
Oh, yeah, that's got to be bullshit. He might be 5'6" and a half. Shit. Who knows? But that's what it is. I mean, it is exciting. I'm glad that they're actually, like, you know, this is a good fight. It's not some shit. He literally just it is the next
big crowd,
like,
too. Big crowd there in Texas. It's going to feel like it's kind of, like, normal. You know what I mean? So that's good.
And it is a good. It's not a guaranteed. It's not a guaranteed win for Canelo. I don't know what you think, but I'm really looking forward to the fight.
I think Canelo's going to win, but I do like the fight. I think those first 4 to 6 rounds are going to be a lot more difficult than people are saying. I really do think that.
Yeah, the second half is what it's all about, man. It really is what it's all about. Yeah, man, I don't know what else is even on the horizon. I've been listening to the show, and I've been, watching as much as possible. I don't know who is fighting who soon, but it's – I don't know. I always say they would just fucking pick it up, man, because even though I know a bunch of shit's going on, but let's be honest.
No, I hear you, though. Not just on the
Boots
hardcore
fucking,
level. I hear you.
They're hyping this fucking guy. He's not. I'm not saying he's an Adrian Broner, but it's not natural. Look how he's moving. It's not natural. He's fucking. He wasn't born that way. He's acting slick. He's not really slick. He's acting slick, and people will see it later on in his career. They will see it, and you know. He's not. Boots isn't what they're making him out to be. You know. They should throw him in there with Danny Garcia so people will find out. Like, it'll be like, oh, shit, okay, he's not all that great. They're hyping that up too much. I wish there's just a little bit more for me to look at. But, light heavyweight, though. We'll see.
Well, I appreciate you calling in, man. It's good to hear your voice and good to hear you're doing good. And,
sure, I'll be calling in.
Yeah. All right, yeah. Cool, man. Peace.
All right,
Letter 310. All right, Mark. Peace. All right. Let's go to Carcino. We got about 22 minutes left of the show. We'll end with Portland, but we're going to go to Carcino for life. What's going on, Carcino? How the hell are you, buddy?
Hey, I'm hanging in there, buddy. Yeah, I'll try to make it quick.
Oh, no, you're good. You're good. Thanks for hanging out. I appreciate that.
I got to go. So I got to make it quick. So we'll get, Canelo fight.
Yeah.
You know, I want to start with the Canelo fight. I think that this fight here is going to be one of the most epic fights in Canelo's history as far as chess matches. I think he's going to land, sure, you know, be able to confuse Saunders, because Saunders never fought anyone like Canelo as far as slick ability. I think he's going to be in for a surprise that Canelo's going to, like, be easier to hit him. And I think Canelo's power is going to surprise him with the shot.
Sure.
Now, I think as the fight goes on, Saunders is going to break down. And that's why I think he's going to start the case. But as of right now, they're still having a, like, dispute.
Right. 20 by 20. That's a small ring now, Carcino. That's an amateur ring to the Billy Joe Saunders camp. 20 by 20 somehow is a small amateur ring now.
Oh, my gosh. Right. It's like mind games. I'm like, 20 by 20 has always been a championship fight.
Standard,
ring.
Dude, yeah.
And, you know, so these could be mind games.
Sure.
But this won't affect Canelo's performance. For Saunders, what he needs to do is use his move. Get Canelo to move. If you get Canelo to move, that's when he's most vulnerable. Floyd just used slight movement, and that's where he knew he could beat Canelo to the spot because he was faster. Canelo had to sit his feet to get some type of leverage on his punches. His feet were not faster than Floyd, so he knew he could get there. Now Canelo knows how to take slight steps to get there and beat the timing. So his foot, so he's not off balance, and he's good at being first by throwing feints the other guy off his pivot. But Billy Joe Saunders is good at moving to his left. When he moves to his left, he's really good at sticking a jab out there and throwing a feint so he can get into position, and he has deceptive speed. Like, once it looks slow, and then when he lands and gets to the spot, he's able to pop his jab and start throwing some combinations. Plus, I don't know how good they're going to do with the end fight. He's really good at clinches and fighting in clinches. Saunders can lean on you and put that weight on and start working while he's in there. And he don't get credit for that, but that's a part of a strategy for him, you know, to wear guys down. And I think his size, you know, he's used to being hit in the ring, you know, and being able to take it and finding ways. Billy Joe Saunders is very slick. That jab is what Canelo's going to have to worry about. He can't sit there and watch. This is a fight he's going to have to use a jab. He's going to have to use feint. He's going to have to outsmart Billy Joe Saunders. And it's going to be a very interesting fight once this fight gets to the second half. In the second half, I just think Canelo's conditioning should be able to, it depends on how the fight is going, he should be able to win a split decision or a majority decision, I would say majority decision, to say the least. He might drop if he catch him late. It would have to be late, around like 6 or 7.
You know, it wasn't all that long ago that Canelo would gas midway, too. Those days are pretty much gone. But remember how Floyd at times would push him back, too?
Canelo still.
Sure, that's true. Yeah,
but,
you're right. He did take some rounds off against Golovkin. That's a good point.
Yeah, if he's throwing a bunch of high-energy punches, you know, he'll take some rounds off, save it. But, like, in all of his fights, he normally fights. Like, it depends on what's happening in the bout. Like, if you're not putting a lot of physical pressure on him, he's able to, you know, coast through. But if he's in a, one of those high-energy fights, he's going to take, like, a, maybe 6 and 7 rounds. All we saw in the Jacobs fight, he kind of gassed and took the foot off the gas. He was up a lot of rounds, and then he kind of took the foot off the gas, and there it was, you know, guys just started, you know, doing what they wanted to do. I mean, Jacobs was starting to get into the fight, and everybody's like, oh, he started too late. It's like, no, nah, Canelo kind of just got tired. So, you know, it depends on what kind of fight Billy Joe Saunders brings, which I think he's going to bring a more cerebral fight and using that jab early on. But Canelo can't let Billy Joe, you know, get into a rhythm. So if Canelo's power starts to affect Saunders and Saunders starts biting off the face and faints and won't come in and commit, then, yeah, this, you could be in for a very interesting fight, because I truly believe Canelo is a little bit slicker, you know, with the slight movements and the same. That's going to be very interesting, you know. But I want to see if Billy Joe Saunders can move and keep Canelo off balance with his footwork and use that jab. I want to see how Canelo counters that, because that's always given him movement. I mean, Laura gave him problems with the movement, and Laura only went one way. So I'm saying Laura's right. Going one way all night long, and he gave Canelo problems. This is right after Mayweather. So, you know, I'm like, so we'll see, because he hasn't fought a guy with a lot of movement from side to side. So if Billy Joe was able to do that, keep turning the corner, keep popping the jab, you know, we'll see how this fight turns out. You know, I think Canelo can take it, though. You know, I mean, that's just me on the decision. And I just want to say something else, kind of get out of here. But Felix Verdejo, man, God. I had talked to Bob Arum, like, the day it happened. It's like they knew. You know, like, the reports they had, they knew. Like, they knew, like, the arrest was coming. He was in questioning then. And I guess they already knew. And they were just like, we're going to put out a press release, and we're, you know, we're not talking about it. We're going to let the investigation, whatever's going on, and we're just going to keep a close eye on it. I said, okay. So they just let me know. They already had the information that what was going on. And that is just another sad situation. It is just tragic. You know, and we got to bring up the questions of CTE, and I don't think anyone brought it up, but I think I've met him, and he is not, you know, like, it just didn't fit his character. And that was, like, years ago, but, you know, some people could be one way, and then you don't really know them, but my goodness, I just, to do that, like, that was almost, like, not even properly planned. It was just poorly. It's like so much stuff from what you're hearing is just like unbelievable. It's like it wasn't even playing right. The guy who supposedly he did this with is rolling on him.
Yeah, completely. He definitely is. Yep, that's where they're getting a lot of the information from.
Yeah, they got all of it from him. He's completely giving up everything and his participation and all of the stuff that went down. So it's not looking good, but I'm like, you didn't want to pay $65,000. You know, it's like, what is going on? For $65,000, basically, in child support, you're going to spend your life in jail, basically. That's what it looks like. And your whole boxing career is done. So I'm
disgusting.
Just like, baffled. Totally baffled by this whole absurdity of it.
Yeah, when you read the detail, you're like, oh, my God. Like you said, that's a good point. You could tell it was just kind of like, let's just do this, because it wasn't planned out that well at all. I mean, you had the bricks fall off. It was just, oh, my God. It is just horrible. Thoughts and prayers go out to the Ortiz family, man. That is just, it just makes you sick to your stomach, man.
Takes me back to his last fight, man. He had the 2 knockdowns and in the fight, and he looked like he was getting ready to win, and then you just start seeing him take some shots, and he was buckling, and that guy just kept coming, and then he ends up knocking him out, and he moves. And I'm wondering, like, how much of this is cerebral damage? He was in a bad motorcycle accident, and it kind of reminds me of Edwin Villario. You know, the Edwin Villario scenario where he was in a, and he cracked his skull. They told him he couldn't fight anymore. He couldn't get a license in the state. And because he couldn't get a license in the state, they approved it somewhere in another country. But his personality totally changed. And he was more violent. And, you know, that ended in tragedy. And then you look at this ending in tragedy. You know, I don't know what his CAT scan showed or what is happening to him, but quite sure this is something that he's only 27 years old. This is
Jesus
Christ. You know, that just shows you how crazy this is. But yeah, I gotta get ready to get out of here, man. I wanna say thanks again
for
having me on the show.
Yes,
and
sir.
Like you said,
enjoy the fight
this
weekend, man.
Yeah, I will. I'm looking forward to your post fight and seeing what we're gonna do. Are you gonna do a post fight or are you gonna
I'm gonna watch it a little later that night because I gotta work. So I'll probably just get me back next Tuesday.
Okay, that's cool. We'll wait till next Tuesday then. This is gonna be great. All right, thanks for having me on, buddy.
Yeah, take it easy, man. Have a good one.
All right.
Peace.
Peace.
Yeah, man. I mean, thoughts and prayers definitely go out to the Ortiz family, man. I mean, when you hear about the details, and obviously at this point it's alleged, but wow, it's just the details are just crazy. I mean, some of it I think may have been captured on film because of where they did it with the bridge close to the. It's just ugly, man. Just ugly. We are gonna let Portland close down the show here in just a second. So here, you know, I actually got some, my boxing Twitter segment. I'll just do a couple of them because people are sending it to me and I don't want to let them down. Some of this is just funny. If Saunders pulls out over the size of the legal ring, he will be the laughingstock of boxing and probably get sued to the end of the earth and ruin his career. But go ahead, make all the empty threats you want, at least. It gives us something to write and talk about. That was Dan Raphael on Boxing Twitter. Okay, what the F? Just give him 2 inches, and he meant 2 feet. If Canelo doesn't, 22, he's exposing some interesting things. If this fight doesn't play out, his empire might start to dismantle. Give him a 22 by 22 ring? No thanks. Fun fact, this is Breadman. For Canelo versus Trout, the Canelo versus Trout bout, the ring surface was incredibly spongy and seemed thicker than usual. I'm not sure if the main event fighters knew, but we did because we were there early fighting in the prelims. The little things count. We changed our game plans. And, you know, the people that are kind of comparing it to the Vlad Klitschko stuff and the Fury stuff with the 5 inches of cushion, that's totally different than wanting a 24-inch ring. Ring size for Pac and Marg and Spence and Mikey was normal 2020, but they only had 50,000 in attendance. So does 70,000 in attendance reserve a right to be a bigger ring? Get the fuck out of here, dude. There was exclusive report from Boxing News, that John Ryder was flying out to Dallas ready to box Canelo if Saunders was going to pull out. Pause. But yeah, when you read the ABC rules, right, and every state's a little different, and some people will read something of a 22 or 24, even I think a 26 and stuff like that in other combat sports that don't go to the ground, but it's still in a ring, not an octagon. But ring size, the ring shall be no less than 16 or more than 20 feet square when measured, you know, side inside the line of the ropes. And it goes on, you know, to talk about the apron and all that. But this is a norm. Like, if
I don't know how they do it. I don't know how AJ and Ruiz, I think that actually was a bat. I think it was 22 by 22, now that I remember correctly. I think, don't quote me on that, but a 20 by 20, dude, that's the ring. Regis versus AB on Triller, and AB performs before the fight. That's good. I like that. That's pretty funny. That's good shit. What about Canelo Alvarez revealing not only that he had COVID for a little bit before the last fight, right? Didn't tell anybody and just got over it. He said he felt okay. But what about the kidnapping the fight week of Rocky Fielding? Over the phone, I'm negotiating everything. For 3 days, I negotiated with these, and I'm not going to even say the word, because I'm not trying to say that to these dudes. So they would let him go. 3 days, and after I negotiated, I was still thinking, imagine if I had been my daughter, my mother, my father. For me, it would have been even more difficult. He just threw his brother under the bus there. And on top of that, I had a fight Saturday and 1,000 interviews and everything, but he was talking about how, what a crazy fight week, if that's true, that he had to freaking, you know, his brother got kidnapped. Pretty freaking crazy. Here's a funny tweet, and then we'll go to Portland. Ariola earned himself another fight on the next PBC Deportes pay-per-view in September. Andy Ruiz versus Luis Ortiz, Fundora versus Rosario, Charles Martin versus Chris Ariola, and Abel Ramos against Donny Onis. Dude, I like I actually like that. One more piece of news. There's a four-hour documentary series on ABC called Mike Tyson, The Knockout, two-part series of Tyson's climb, crash, and comeback. That'll be Tuesday, May 25th, and the following, June 1st, from 8 to 10 Eastern. So that could be interesting. Maybe it's just a bunch of stuff we've also heard. You know, it's tough to say. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and let Portland shut this thing down. We're coming off a Cinco de Mayo card with a bunch of Mexicanos going head-to-head, and now we got the head honcho Mexicano right here with Canelo Alvarez this weekend. Let's go out to 503 Portland and let him shut this puppy down. What's going on, Portland? You are live on Rope-A-Dope Radio per usual.
Mexicanos al grito de guerra, el acero aprestado y el bridón, y retiemble en sus centros la tierra al sonoro rugir del cañón. Y retiemble en sus centros la tierra al sonoro rugir del cañón. Siño patria, tus pieles de oliva, de la paz del arcángel divino, que en el cielo tu eterno destino por el dedo de Dios escribió. Mas si osare un extraño enemigo profanar con sus plantas tu suelo, pienso, patria querida, que el cielo un soldado en cada hijo te dio, un soldado en cada hijo te dio. Mexicanos, el grito de guerra, el acero a prestar y el bridón, y retiemble en sus centros la tierra al sonoro rugir del cañón. Y retiemble en sus centros la tierra al sonoro rugir del cañón.
We are Mexico, cabrones. We already know. We got Canelo, baby. Woo!
What's your predictions?
Oh, yeah, you already know, bro. The BJ, he's already, you know, man, you already hear he's a no-show for this press conference, man. You know, it's already getting a little shady. There's a backup, but, you know, Canelo says the fight is going to happen. So, you know, there's no worry about it. But we already know, you know, Canelo's going to take this. It's all in favor of Canelo, the judges, the ref. You know, there's no international judges.
I got
Canelo
8-4,
you know what I mean?
By the way. I got Canelo 8-4. I think it's going to be for the first four to six rounds, though, it'll be an even fight. And I think Canelo will make the adjustments down the stretch. Go ahead. I forgot to even do my prediction.
No, it's all good. Yeah, but it's like, yeah, I got him. You know what I mean? It's the Canelo show. You know, he's going to take care of business. You know, we're going to move on to the next one. But it's funny, man. It's like, you know, Eduardo Hearns, man, you know, it seems like he's picked his side. So, you know what I mean? So it's cool. It's cool. Like, you know, we got some British people on our side, you know what I mean? So it's kind of, I don't know, man, it's cool. Is this going to be the Canelo show? We already know Cinco de Mayo is tomorrow, but we're celebrating still this next weekend. Chris, please, man, you know, you know, get the festivities going, get the tequila going, man. I don't know if you're a drinker, but, you know, take a shot for the Mexicanos this weekend, for Canelo. You know what it is, bro, you know, and also put something in the air for everybody out there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So let's have some fun. At the end, you know, at the end of the day, this is a fight. Let's just enjoy it. You know what I mean? Let's not have you know, let's not bicker at one another and hate each other for this. You know, this is the sport that gets together. Let's enjoy festivities, man. This is, you know, like I said, this is the weekend for another Mexicans, man. And also, man, it's just badass, man. You know, we keep celebrating. So, but Ruiz also too. Let me finish it with Ruiz.
Yeah,
Ruiz
let's do that.
Was good. I thought, you know, he looked fast. You know, but and also too, man, I gotta give a shout out to Areola for fucking putting that right hand on him, man, and making the money's worth, for giving us such a tremendous shocker with, like, almost, you know, with that punch. Man, my God, my goodness. But Ruiz took that shit and kept coming forward, like they were saying, Mexican blood in him. You know, this is, you know, this is for the Mexicans. And not only that, but, you know, the crowd out there, you know, the crowd having fun, you know, they're throwing hands too. You know what I mean? Everybody's acting wild, man. And especially
those are real
this weekend
fights too,
bro.
Dude. Those are real punches, real fights.
Oh man, it's just crazy, man. But that was a cool event, you know what I mean? Figueroa got whooped. That one was the hardest one to watch, because I like Figueroa, and you know what I mean. But you know, that was heartbreaking to watch, man. That eye was fucked up, and I just, you know what I mean. That movement was, you know, it was unpredictable. Shout out to Abel Ramos, did it. You know, shout out to him, and also shout out to El Tigre, man. El Tigre, he went under the radar. Adrian Granados, the Tiger, man, he brought that Tiger blood. You know, he showed balls, man. That's what I love about this kid. And shout out to it was on the untelevised card. So if you get to watch, if you want to watch it, it's on the Fox app or the Fox Now app. You know, just look up that. But then, man, shout out to the kid. This was, you know, it was a draw, man. This is so heartbreaking for the kid, man. It's just so hard to beat him, man. It's just like he just, I don't know. Just he's had such a hard career, man. It's tough opposition, and then like, and there's just, you know, always being used as the B side. So, but this one, man, this one was supposed to be his. But Dan, if you got to see it, Chris, this one was wild, man. This one was dope. But I agree with the draw. There was times where Granados did look good and didn't look good. So I thought a draw was sufficient. I thought, because they only did go 8 rounds. But other than that, you know what I mean? It was good. It was a good card from top to bottom. And shout out to Laura, again, that first round knockout, man. That shit was fucking, damn, bro. I didn't predict that shit. I would have never guessed in a million years that shit was going to happen just like that. Lightning, struck, you know what I mean? I guess Lamana, man, you know, lights out, man. But fuck, man, there's a new name at 160 pounds, and shout out to Laura. I believe he's going to get something good after this. So, you know, shout out to him, shout out to Cuba, man. And, you know, they're doing it big with this one. So, but Chris, I don't have too much to say. Let me get out of here, bro. It's always Viva Mexico all day, every day. Viva Ropa Dope Radio. And always, man, Canelo runs this shit. Canelo runs boxing, baby. Viva Mexico.
Viva Mexico all the way, 100%. Like I said, those fights in the stands were like, no, hold me back. Nah, dude, these guys were throwing punches, dude. That shit was awesome. All right, we're going to get out of here. I think we're still on. It kind of looks like it fell off. I don't know, but enjoy the fights. Like I said, I got it. Canelo 8-4, I think the first, maybe even 6-8 rounds. Billy Joe's going to do more than a lot of people think. He's got the skill to do it, and I'm not sold that Canelo can cut off the ring all day. I think he'll win the fight. I think he'll go to the body, and you know, you got to win by, like, I don't know if he can win 8 rounds on him, and I think that's what it's going to take to win the fight. We'll be back next week. Peace.